Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros,
welcome back to another edition of Leaving the Ring. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gable Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. Let me know how I sound. I'm using my tablet today. Remember, I was telling everybody how my computer, my desktop, had been acting up, and finally, it just shut down completely. I got a tech guy coming out, and he didn't come out till Saturday, so I can't get my desktop computer going, so I had to use my tablet. And then I had to make Gabriel, which he's probably, you know, the dark cloud is going to come out because he's got to use a cell phone, and we know about that quality of the cell phone. You there, brother?
I'm going to kill you. Yeah, hi. How you doing, man? Happy Thursday.
Well, you know, everything's been going wrong with Leaving the Ring. We were supposed to do a live broadcast at the Solo Book Sale this past Saturday in Fairfield, California, but we failed to find out what to investigate, and I guess in our part, but it's in their part too as well, where it was an army bunker, some type of army bunker. It was a jam, so the walls were all solid, you know, brick, so there was really no way of getting any internet. We had some hot spots there, but it just wasn't working. It was one of those deals, man, that we just had to end up pulling the plug and filming instead. I haven't had any time for us to kind of put up any of the stuff that we've done. Gabriel's back on the line with me. So we apologize for Saturday for not doing it, but they did invite us to come back. They want us to do a live broadcast at one of their events, preferably the one where Jorge Linares is going to be at. I believe he's going to be in Woodland, California, and that's in October, if I remember correctly. That's what they told me. So anyways, we got a lot of stuff here on Leaving the Ring, a lot of things to talk about. Fights upcoming, you know, Andre Ward and Chad Dawson around the corner. We got Borja de Leon coming on, Leaving the Ring. We got Sergio Martinez. We got you know, Iceman Scully coming on. So we got a lot of stuff to offer here to the listeners. So I hope everybody enjoys tonight's show.
It was a trip, man. Just going up there, it was nice to see that venue, the Fairfield Sports Arena. Or Sports Center, rather. It's definitely not an arena. But the crowd there was about 1,000 people, like somewhere between 8,000 and 9,000. And, you know, I'm sure most of those were paid. It didn't seem like there was a lot of comp action going on. And it was, they were really into it, man. Each fight camp, that's what I love about going to local shows, is each fight camp brings, you know, so many different people with them. And they have a vested, like, emotional interest. And so there's a different charge in the crowd. People are just standing up and going crazy, they you know, they're cheering for their guy. I had a heck of a time. I really enjoyed it. It was a bummer that we were inside of a brick bunker that literally blocked our internet to the point where none of our machines were working.
Exactly.
I really wanted to do the Ustream, but we'll do it again.
Even though listeners weren't able to, you know, see what we were doing and kind of following the fun that we had, it made up with the people that showed up. It just kind of reminds us of being truthful and going for the truth and speaking of the truth about the sport, how there are a lot of writers and media and fans and listeners that are appreciative of what we do. You know, we had a chance to talk it up with a lot of people. A lot of folks were coming up to us, and it turned out to be just a great, 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 great night, you know. I had a chance to talk about a little bit about the Solo Book Sale card on the Boxing Fix, which airs on Sunday night. And I got to tell you, you know, I was talking about, we'll go back into the crowd. I think the crowd, you know, the people that showed up for the local fighters there, they're the ones that made it. They made that event, man, in my opinion. You know, they got everybody pumped up. They got everybody into it. You know, and I think it made the fighters step it up. You know, really step it up. And, you know, I know Alan Sanchez, it took a while for the kid to, you know, get it going. And I don't know if it had something to do with his fans being there, his family members. But to me, it just seemed like it took him a lot longer to figure out the man across from him. From the time we saw him face, you know, Emilio Reyes, he figured out Emilio Reyes within a minute or so. And it could probably contribute from the first time they fought in that rematch, but it just drugged out, Gabriel. Well, I don't know what you thought. Now, you were next to me, and I told you, oh, my God, this is like a toothache.
Well, it was an interesting fight, and I think it just comes, it speaks to the different mentalities, the different approaches that his last two opponents had. Artemio Reyes was coming off a huge win. He was coming off the Molina win, and he had confidence, and then his father dies. I mean, I think he was kind of doing it for dad a bit, and he had a lot on his mind. I think he was, I don't know if he was weight drained or what, but I think he was emotionally drained. But the mentality is still, I'm young, I'm on a winning streak, I'm a lion, I'm going to go out there and be aggressive. That played right into his hands, into Sanchez's hands. Now, Levia is coming from a completely different place. He's been knocked out twice this year. I think lost, what, 5 of his last 7. He's a guy that's now wary about getting hit in the head because he's been stopped twice this year, you know, once back in June. Remember, I was asking, like, how is this fight even happening? Because, like, you know, Levia should be on 90-day suspension. You know, July, August, September, like we weren't quite there yet. I think he was kind of playing a little more defensive. He was boxing in spots. And maybe, you know, being in front of the hometown, I think it's harder to win at home. I really do. You know, you got all, everybody's asking you for tickets. You're training around home, so people, you know, are kind of buzzing around you, maybe distracting you. I don't know what his camp was like. He seemed like he was in good shape. He was able to get the stoppage late. But there was something different. It just speaks to styles make fights, but I think also mentalities and approaches make fights. You know, and Reyes came forward and was there to be taken. And Levia, you know, he took some shots and he would exchange, but he spent a lot of times moving backwards and hiding in his guard and not really trying to, you know, do long exchanges because he knew he was going to get caught. And I think that spoke to it as well. I don't know. It was more interesting. It wasn't the fight I was expecting, you know.
Absolutely, man. You know, and being there, you know, it's live. When he did step it up, when he ended up stepping it up after that shot to gut, I think that kind of woke him up and shook him, and it made him realize that he had to attack. You know, and like on the boxing fix, I said that Alan Sanchez had to be a dirty Sanchez. He had to wake up, and he had to go after, you know, his opponent, and that's what he did. You know, and I don't know if I'm throwing this maybe too far out in the field, but I think that Guy Robin and Sanchez have it sewed up in the Northern California. They may be the two best produced fighters in Northern California. You know, the other guys are still in development, but right now Sanchez, to me, he's got speed, he's got power, he's got height. I'm really interested in seeing him a little bit more and step it up. I do want to see a rubber match, though, with Reyes. I got to tell you that.
I think so. I mean, I think this fight kind of showed that a little bit, that maybe there's emotional letdown. But certainly I want to see that fight again, and Reyes is back to his winning ways. I think it's only fair, you know, that they do that one more time, you know. It wasn't like, I mean, let's do a do-over, you know, I wasn't ready yet, because that's just boxing. You know, if you weren't ready, you were mentally somewhere else, that's on you. It's not on the guy that won. He can only do as well as he can. You know, that's his responsibility. But I want to see the fight again. I think it would be a better fight the third time. I think it would be a fun fight.
Absolutely, man. I think so, too. We'll talk a little bit about Randy Caballero in a short minute. I want to take some calls really quick while, you know, we are our first guest will be coming up about 5:30, Daniel Ponce de Leon. So let's patch in. Let's get in Frank, who wants to join the conversation. What's up, brother? You're on live right now and leaving the ring.
David, what's up? Gabe, what's up, guys? Just listening to the show tonight. You know, it's been a rough August. You know, I've been saying it all this month. It's been a rough August for boxing. I know you guys were talking about some of the local fights, but we're getting back to business in September. And, you know, I see you guys have a stellar lineup tonight, and definitely looking to hear what Sergio Martinez has to say about the vandalism and the attacks, I guess, that went on his property and the threats and all that stuff. So kudos on getting Maravilla on here this evening.
Yeah, thanks, man. Appreciate it, brother.
Thanks,
yeah, it has been slow this month, you know, but we're getting back in gear, getting back on track. I'm excited. This month of September is going to be a good one for us boxing heads. So got to see what's going to happen.
You know?
Hopefully, though, it just lives up to the month of stacked cards. You know, we want to get those big fights. We want to get those exciting fights. So let's see what happens.
I got to be honest, man. It's also been summertime. You know, it's been August. It's been really nice out. And, you know, we don't have a lot of fights to talk about. It's like a mini vacation. I know everybody's kind of like grinding. We got to get all these guests and get, you know, stack it with like 20 guests in 2 hours. But, you know, now it's kind of, we have things to talk about. You know, we're just a few days away from a fight I'm really excited about, Gennady Golovkin and Gregor Sprotsa. That's going to be all action. It's going to be awesome. Sturm versus Gill is going to be a really good fight. September is going to be hot. You know, Dawson Ward, I'm excited. I don't care what anybody else says. I'm excited about that fight. And obviously, you know, Martinez and Chavez and even Canelo versus Ocesito Lopez. I put something out about that's coming out tonight on Max Boxing about Canelo. And even looking past that, October, the story I'm working on right now as people are talking, is the Nishioka versus Donaire. That's going to be a great fight. And so is Rios versus Alvarado. That's going to be an awesome fight. That's already on paper fight of the year, you know. I think August, we just had that dip. We missed, you know, we were supposed to get Golovkin versus Pirog. That's the fight I really wanted, but I'll take this one too. You know, this is fine. But, man, it was a brutal August. But at the same time, I don't know about you, Dave, but, like, when we took that week break, I was kind of happy about it, you know, and went to the beach and enjoyed myself, you know.
I was, you know, we needed that break. And, you know, we've been, you know, I've had a few emails of folks hitting us up and saying, where you guys been? You guys are kind of, you know, falling off. But at the same time, we have been putting in the work behind the scenes. It's just we haven't been able to transfer it through the radio. But we're back on track. We're going to be, we're not going to miss a week so that nobody misses out on what we're doing. We're going to make sure we're consistent. You know, it's just we needed a break, man. You know, it's hard work. A lot of folks don't know how much it takes to develop a show and keep it going every week. So, but we're back.
The travel thing we're doing is definitely not easy. You know, I'm looking forward to it though. Next week, what, September 8th, from Henry Ramirez's gym. Well, it's not his gym, the Two Feathers gym, but out there in Riverside for Josecito Lopez, it'll be the night of the Ward Dawson fight. We're all gonna be there. I'm excited, man. That's going to be fun stuff, you know. And the Ustream thing, I think it's something that we're going to develop, and it's going to get bigger and bigger. Now we're partnering up with Billy C and everything. I'm excited for the rest of the year. You know, it's only like a little bit past halfway.
What are you excited about, it, Fred? What fight is out there right now that you can't wait to see, and what's the prediction and your breakdown?
You know, all right, look at it like this, guys. I think this weekend is a good prelude to September. You know, I mean, look, the three of us were hardcore into boxing. You know, there's not too many people, you know,
right,
that I can say that literally are my next door neighbors. I mean, this is our universe, basically. You know what I'm saying? We're not all the next door neighbors, but social networkingly, we are. You know what I'm saying? And this is the prelude. But then you got September 8th. I'll be live in Vegas at Alexander Bailey, and I'm not disappointed. I think, again, it's a sensational fight. You know, you got to wait. You got to watch. 20 punches
right
in the fight that Bailey throws. One of them connects. You know, he retains the IBF title. Then you got Matisse and I think it's Illusion or Illusion, whatever. That's an intriguing fight because I'm not too familiar with Jose Illusion. So I'm looking forward to that. And also, you know, I'm going to try to stream the Ward-Dawson fight. And, you know, I've said this before, guys. You know, Ward-Dawson, I love it. You know, and I was actually thinking about making the trip to Oakland if we didn't have something here in Vegas. But I said this before. I said this to a few other people, and I wanted to know what you guys thought. You know, it's a mouth-watering fight for guys like us. But if we were to turn it on to someone who isn't necessarily a huge boxing fan, but a Mike Tyson, Manny Pacquiao, Floyd Mayweather boxing fan, that type of guy. Is that the type of fight that you say, hey, come over to my house, we'll order pizza, have beer? You know, it's like that song that you let your friends listen to and say, oh, you're going to love this song, and they sit there with that still face, and you're like, damn, you kind of feel let down. Is Ward Dawson that type of fight you would show your friends not necessarily into boxing?
Well, I would, you know, what's funny is that I'm one of those really kind of in-your-face type of fan where no matter what, I really don't care if they don't like it or not. I'm just going to invite them regardless, and maybe we end up striking gold. We never know, you know what I mean? So it's one of those type of things, because there are fights that we have looked at and overlooked them and said, it's not going to be a good fight. And guess what? It turns out to be an excellent fight. So I'm going to have my hopes and my fingers crossed on Ward and Dawson. But, you know, you got that undercard that's really looks like a stellar, man. I mean, Molina and Marcos, DeMarco, that fight's definitely going to be fan-friendly, you know. So I can't wait for it. Too bad we're not going to be out there. I did get my credential for it, but I'm going to have to, you know, send it on to somebody else because we're going to be with Henry Ramirez, with Josecito Lopez, the Riverside Rocky, and talking to him about his strategy and what he's going to do in September 15 against Canelo Alvarez. Frank, thanks for calling in, brother. I really appreciate it, man. I'm going to put you on hold.
I'll be listening, guys. Have a great show, guys. Thank you.
Thank you, man.
I appreciate it.
You want to call in, you certainly can. 347-215-7598. I almost forgot our own number because it's been a minute since we've been on the air live. Anyways, we want to talk some boxing here. 3 hours of boxing talk on Leaving the Ring with myself, Dave Duenas, and Gable Montoya, the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. Certainly can. 347-215-7598. I feel like, you know what, man, we got to catch up with the fight fans here, Gabriel. We haven't talked to any of the fight heads out there in the world because we haven't been around for a minute. So let's patch in another fight fan before we start breaking down some fights that are coming up and before we get our first guest, which is going to be Daniel Ponce de Leon. Let's get CT. What's up, brother? You want to talk about Martinez Chavez face-off? I got to tell you the truth. Didn't watch it. Haven't seen it. I've been really busy, but I've heard a lot about it, man. But go ahead, break it down. What you want to talk about?
Yeah, I think you're pretty much going to love it, Dave. I put it up there with Hay and Klitschko, you know, one of the best face-offs I've seen. I'm not going to say too much because I know you got to watch it yourself, but I would just say this. Martinez looks very, very upset. You know, he's looking forward to knocking Chavez out. He's definitely, you know, very angry at Chavez. You know, I blame Jose Suleiman for all this, you know, taking the title from him and stuff like that. But you know what? The fight is here. I think it's a very good fight, and I'm very much looking forward to it. I think it's a very tough fight to pick, and I'm going to give my prediction, you know, during the week of the fight. But, yeah, it's a pretty good face-off. You know, both guys had good points.
Chavez Jr. is like, he definitely knows that he's the villain in this fight. Like,
no.
You know, I kind of like that. I mean, maybe he's not. Maybe in his mind he's not. But I think he knows that he bothers Sergio Martinez, you know, that – yeah, I got your belt. Yeah, I'm the son of a champion. Like, okay, yeah, and then what? You know, what are you going to do about it? And, yeah, I'm gigantic also, you know.
You know what I mean? He's heard it his whole life. You know, you're the son of a champion. You're the son of a legend. I think he's kind of immune to it already. And I think he's, honestly, what I've heard and what I've read, it looks like he's playing that to get in underneath the skin of Sergio at the same time and get in the mind. He's using it as a tool. He's using it as an advantage, you know. And, of course, yeah. It helps when you get somebody to vandalize your vehicle and everything else, you know, a little bit of intimidation outside the ring.
Yeah, that's cool. you know, I don't know, though, because it's weird. I was watching it. I'm wondering, you know, is Sergio out of character? You know, sometimes you can find the guy that's going to lose by finding the guy that's out of his character. And Chavez Jr., I think in the last few fights, he's finding his character. He's finding who he is in the ring. He's understanding
right. That,
you know, yeah, I'm not fast. You know, I'm very durable, and I hit hard because I'm bigger than the other guys. And it's concussive power. It's not like that one-punch knockout power.
I'm very much looking forward to the Golovkin. I mean, I've heard so much about him. I've seen a couple of fights on YouTube, and I just want to see what all the hype is about. From what I've seen, though, I look at him as a very hard, come-forward fighter who, you know, has hard punching. He has very heavy hands. He hits hard with both hands. But I think the guy, Polska, that he's fighting, from what I see from him, he has a little bit of the style that I believe that can maybe be Golovkin. You know what I mean? He has that style. You know, he's not a traditional type Polish fighter. He kind of has some movement to him. Carries his hands down a little bit low, but he has okay craft. You know what I mean? I just want to see what both fighters bring to the table. I think it should be a very good fight, or as long as it lasts. From what I see, I think I'm going to pick Golovkin on this. He's probably going to wear him down and stop him late. But you never know what can happen.
That's what I'm leaning towards. He's going to stalk him and beat him down and then get him out probably like around 11.
Yeah.
But we'll get more in-depth on the breakdown on that fight. But I'm excited about that. He's an interesting cat, Golovkin, and he really – what I like what they're doing with him is he wants to be a world champion, like in the realest sense of the word. He wants to fight in Europe. You know, he's going to fight hopefully like 3 to 4 times a year is what they want. A couple times on HBO. Should things go well, you know, this Saturday, then he'll probably be a lock to get another date soon after, you know, maybe end of the year or beginning of the year. And then but at the same time, though, they want to do like they do with the Klitschkos, which is get him to fight in Germany or get him to fight in Russia, fight him overseas so that he stays active, but he also becomes globally known as opposed to just an HBO twice-a-year fighter. I like that plan.
Yeah. I really wanted to fight Carol, but...
Oh, that's wishing too much, man. You're asking, that's some early Christmas gifts there you're asking for.
Who you want him to fight?
No, I was saying I wish he would have fought Pirog. You know, I know Pirog pulled out, but I was hoping they were going to make that fight happen.
For things to go well this year. This has been the year of injury and fights that just fall apart. Such a bummer. But, you know, what I was bummed for is that it was, you know, Pirog had been in this position for so long, trying to get on HBO and trying to get a good fight. And this was kind of, to me, a fight where HBO was saying, well, look, we're not going to have both of you guys, but, you know, whoever emerges from this is going to be the guy, you know. And if you guys, if it's an all-time classic, maybe we'll put both of you. But it was a chance to validate all the things that Pirog had said, you know, and claimed. And I'm wondering if they're going to go back, you know. If Golovkin wins this, you know, it's probably going to be, let's say, you know, well, there's a lot of things going on. You got Sturm and Gil fighting each other. If Sturm wins, which I expect him to by decision, he's probably going to vacate that belt and move up. And somebody else will fight for it. Maybe they do Golovkin against that person. Kid Chocolate is going to end up fighting for that WBO belt. I think he's fighting for like a vacant version. So he's probably going to end up with it. In which case, I highly doubt they'll put him in with Gennady Golovkin. He'll probably just be maneuvered into a belt and you know, we'll have to forget all about
it. Strong possibility he'll probably get somebody else, you know. So, anyway,
yeah,
thanks for coming in front of
the Golovkin he'll be a strong possibility. He'll be in line for the Martinez-Chavez winner. That's what, at least what HBO will want. If it's Chavez, obviously that's not going to happen. They'll maneuver him in other directions. But if it's Martinez,
right,
I would probably expect that fight to be made. I think he'll be screaming for Mayweather if he knocks out Chavez Jr. That's never going to happen. I think Golovkin will be the thing. But he's going to be, in my opinion, if he wins, he's going to be the middleweight that HBO really backs just because he's got that style. And he is willing to speak English. He spoke English all through our interview. It's easy to do what other guys haven't done.
Hmm. Yeah, that always helps. That always helps, man.
Yeah.
You know, English, go back and learn it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
CT, thanks for calling in, brother. I'm going to put you back on hold.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thanks, CT.
It was this past weekend, you know, it weren't big fights, but it were, you know, showcase fights. Randy Caballero was back in Fantasy Springs. And, you know, we had a chance to talk about him, Gabriel. You know, we're kicking back and watching this fight. And, you know, at the same time, we were, you know, I was grabbing some brewskis and we were shouting back at each other, but we were watching this stuff. And one of the things that we were talking about was, you know, we're seeing the same Randy Caballero, you know, and I was saying that I think I have a strong possibility that he's too comfortable being at home. I think he's on his own. There's no urgency out of him. There's no pressure. You know, when a guy fights so many times at hometown, you know, and you don't see a step up, you know, or a second or a third or a fourth gear out of the guy, that to me starts to seem like a problem. I like to see him get pulled away. I like to see him, you know, go to somebody else's hometown, scratch at the surface and see how well he does at the edge. I like to see that out of Randy Caballero because right now Randy's good, but we just don't know how good he is.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point. I mean, at one level, I like that they've built them as a draw at home. You know, that's important. We talk about that all the time. But at the same time, I don't know. I mean, I don't see him really growing as a fighter. On the inside, he's not progressed. You know, his outside game is fine. His mid-range game is fine. He gets inside, and there's not anything going on. You know, and that's something that needs to be addressed. I don't know if they bring in a veteran trainer, somebody to kind of polish and add. There's a veteran polish that's missing. There's the old school tricks are missing. That gray area I've talked about in the past. Those things are not there. That's what I would like to see from him. And I don't know if, you know, he's not the biggest guy in the world. So it's not like, I mean, this is his division. He's going to have to grow into it and move towards title, you know, contendership and get a title right here, right now. He's got to get better at the things that he's missing. And I'm not seeing that happen. I'm not saying throw everything out, like, oh, he needs a new trainer and get Manny Stewart or whoever, big-name trainer I could think of, but maybe adding something because it seems like there is something missing. And I don't know if it's a lack of passion or a lack of fire. I just think there's a lack of polish. That I want to see from him.
You know, I agree. I agree to a certain point, but I think that lack of something is really a comfort zone. You know, he's comfortable. He understands that this is his hometown. He understands that these are his fans. He understands that this is his corner and it's going to be his moment. I say take that all away from a man. You take them out of their comfort zone, we find out what's really in the heart. We find out what's really in the mind. We find out if there is a will there for him to fight. That's what I want to see. I think that's what's missing from Randy Caballero right now. How good is he? Can he fight in the inside? The only way you're going to find out is take him out of his hometown, because hometowns don't want to see their heroes get in a real fight. Hometowns want to be able to stand and stomp their feet, clap their hands, and have a chant with their hometown fighter's name in it.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say, you know. I think if you said, if you made this criticism to Golden Boy or even to Cameron, like, yeah, maybe we should fight other places, they would tell you, you know, what are you, crazy? And I think Golden Boy would get pissed, be like, geez, you know, you guys bitch about us every other way. The first time we tried to, like, develop a guy near his home, and now you think it's bad for him. I get your point, you know, that the there needs to be a fire lit on some level or – that he needs to feel that it's not all set up for me to win again, to get that kind of competitive spirit. I understand that. But for me, it's something different, you know. And like Linus says, I mean, that follows us on Twitter, he just says, like, you know, I'm just not sold on him yet. I think there's just something missing.
Right.
I think it's a technique thing. I don't think he's getting the most out of his abilities. I still see kind of a wide stance. I still see some bad habits that show up. The chin goes up a little bit too high. I think he can get more power than he's getting just by the placement of his feet. There's a lot there. I just don't think he's getting everything out of it. And that's why, again, you know, I just think he needs some sort of professional polish. What time is
Absolutely.
Call in
no.
Ponce de Leon? 7:30?
Yes, sir. You know what? I got to find out. I got to get a translator before we can even do that.
Do that.
Yeah, I did text him to find out if he can come on. I've got to text back. So let me hit somebody else up, see if they can translate for us here on Leave in the Ring. And so let me work some magic here on Leave in the Ring.
It's always an adventure.
Always.
While Dave is figuring out his translation situation, I'm kind of just looking at the weekend. The Stern versus Daniel Gill fight is interesting to me. Just because, you know, Stern has been like that, the proverbial, like, bend but not break, you know, the last few fights. You know, he gets a draw, he gets a fight that he didn't deserve. And Gill is kind of in that mold of the guys that have been troubling him. He's going to come forward, he's going to throw a lot of punches. He does actually believe in body punching. Comparable size. I mean, he's a little bit shorter, and I think reach-wise, they're about even. He's probably going to eat a lot of jabs from Sturm, is Gill, but he's to me, he doesn't seem as sharp-worn. You know, 10 less fights. He's a little bit younger. there's still a fire there. I mean, he's been making good money. You know, he got the belt, and then they went over and did a couple title defenses, got him some wins. But he's also at the same time grinding it out with guys that are kind of on the next tier. They're certainly not on Felix Sturm's level. So I still feel that Sturm's going to pull it out. He's just going to outbox him. But, you know, he hasn't exactly looked like dynamite in his last few fights. He's going, you know, longer and longer rounds. I mean, he's a guy that's always been kind of designed to go rounds, but the rounds he's been going have been just a little bit harder. I was surprised in this
right.
fight, I got to be honest, but still, I don't know. There's something about Gil. He just doesn't seem like he's going to quit, you know, and he seems like he's still hungry. And with Sturm, I mean, it's like they're protecting a business, and I still think they're going to move to 68. So with that in mind, too, you kind of wonder, you know, how much does he want this? You know, how much is he willing to sacrifice to keep that belt? You know, he's got the WBA belt. I made a mistake, and it's Kid Chocolate is going to be fighting for the.
It amazes me how the change of for Felix Sturm. You know, here was a guy that came down to the States to fight Oscar De La Hoya before he was getting in the ring with the then middleweight champion of the world Bernard Hopkins, and he was literally out jabbing De La Hoya, and they took that fight away from him so they could continue to make on the Hopkins fight. And lesson learned, huh? He was like, you know what? I got to stick in my own hometown, my own home country, and where I'll have my way and not go anywhere else. You know, he kind of sold that up.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, that's what we do here. You know, we're so American-centric.
Right.
We just are like, a guy has a belt. We never really think about it, you know. We only think about it when there's a guy with a belt in a country that won't come over here, you know. Or the Klitschkos, you know, we've abandoned the heavyweights. And granted, the heavyweights aren't the greatest here or anywhere, but because they're over in the Ukraine, like, we don't really care, you know. And they're not really planning on bringing them over here. The experiment didn't exactly work. I'd like to see the Klitschkos fight in L.A. again. I mean, there's something about those guys, you know, and there's something about heavyweights. You forget, you know, when you don't see a heavyweight fight for a while, and then you do, and you see it on that high level. Like, this is why this was so popular. There's something special about seeing men that gigantic with each other and try to knock each other out, you know. Oh, wait, so we're going to...
Let's pass it on to another fight fan while we're waiting to see us. One of the guys from Noche de Boxeo to hit us back to let us know if they're going to translate for us here with the Ponce de Leon. You know, let's talk to. See if I can get him on. D, what's up, brother? It's been a while. How you doing? You're on live right now.
What's happening? What's happening, fellas?
What's up, D? How you doing, man?
Oh, man. I wanted to chime in about the whole Kerrigan thing last week, but I had to go. But, what the hell's going on with that dude, man?
With Kirkland?
What's going on, man? That dude, man. His future looks so bright there, man, after Angulo, right? Didn't come
it
out of the woodwork
like,
with that crazy mess.
It just seemed too good to be true, I guess, you know. He wins that, blows up in weight, apparently, for the Molina camp. And then he comes in, it's more like a fat camp, you know, and
right.
gets all the weight off, looks like crap in the fight as a result. He claims it's two black pills that somebody gave him. I think it's Ann Wolf that he's intimating gave him black pills that made him high as a kite, quote unquote. And so late in the fight, when he finally was able to drop Molina, I guess that's when the drug wore off magically, like Muhammad Ali versus Sonny Liston. This
right.
is all his claim. And now he's fired everybody. He's fired the managers. He's fired the lawyers. He's fired the trainers. And he's trying to fire the promoter. The problem is he's just re-upped a contract for, I think, February of 2018. So James is staying put. James is staying exactly where he needs to be, which is on the bench kind of thinking about what he's doing. Because I don't think he's going to get out of this contract. So he's working with Sifu Gary, who's with TMT Promotions. helps Yuri Gamboa move over to TMT Promotions. Top
right.
Rank, in my opinion, kind of got well with that. They were paid $1.5 million. They're like, here you go. We're out of the contract. You can have Gamboa. And I got to be honest. I mean, the guy hasn't fought. They're talking about that November 17th date, but who knows if that's actually going to come off. I don't think it's going to. Golden Boy's now claiming they've got it, although it's kind of funny. Like, they're saying, we have it. It's like, well, what's the fight? Well, we'll get back to you on that. You know, everybody's kind of playing that same game. But, again, I mean, you kind of wonder what TMT is going to do. And I think why I'm talking about that is that I think that what's happening with James, and this is just my theory, but that his quote-unquote advisor is trying to move James over to TMT. And James doesn't really know all the players involved. He doesn't know Al Haymon. He doesn't know what 50 Cent is doing. He just knows that what they're telling him, which is his contract is full of breaches and all kinds of things, and we need to get you out of it.
Right.
You know, James to me makes emotional decisions. He doesn't make well thought out decisions. He's more of a street kid. When it comes to business, it's just not there. You know, this guy, he really follows that you know stereotypical quote of a fighter's dumb. You know what I mean? You know, it's pretty much his moves have been, let's be honest, dumb. They haven't been the greatest moves here. This guy's exciting. He could probably be one of the great fighters right now, bar error, but he's really just not disciplined. You know, he's got the spirit of a fighter. He just doesn't have the fighter's spirit, you know, to discipline himself. It's really sad to see the kid go down the drain, man. I hate to see great talent just be flushed away just on their own part. He's his worst enemy.
Right. I mean, the whole thing is, I can see him doing Golden Boy like that, but he's going to do pops and whoop. Either do and pops like that? Come on, man.
Yeah, that's the worst part of it all. That's the worst part of it all. You know, and even like with Ann, she hasn't really made many public statements. She made one with me in my piece a couple weeks back. But she basically was like, I'll be fine. I know how to survive. I know how to take care of my family. I'll have other fighters. She's a young woman. You know, she's 41. But she's like Pops, you know. Like, she was Pops' first great fighter. And I can say great. She had four division titles simultaneously. She thought, and Pops thought, that James would be their second, you know, and their first together. And that's just not going to happen. You know, there's not... To me, James is going to use his chances. I mean, you know, I mean, I could be wrong. The contracts could be bad. He could move to TMT and there'll be a great company and he'll turn it all around with some other trainer we've never even thought of. The odds say that's not going to happen. His last chance was the chance. You know, like when he beat Angulo, he came all the way back. You know, and we knew, okay, he's going to be chinny and he's going to be probably knocked out again at some point, but it's going to be fun while it lasts. But I thought it would last a little longer than this. You know, it's just a bummer. You know?
Yeah, he KO'd himself. That's the sad part, you know?
Yeah, that's what James better not wind up back in jail and I'm just not hearing good.
I don't know. I mean, I told you that. Remember when we were talking about it on the way to Fairfield? I said, it wouldn't cross my mind if he ends up back in jail.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, decisions that he makes, man, it just leads. It's repetitive. You know, some guys just don't know how to leave being incarcerated. They end up bringing that mentality out with them, and he obviously brings that, you know, trust no one attitude and make my decisions on the fly attitude that it just spells for destruction.
I agree. All right, about that depressing shit, man. Do you think Chavez is going to beat Martinez?
You know,
I put some money on Chavez, man. All right, a couple hundred.
Is that right?
Yes. It'll probably be a little over 200 after the whole week. But I think you could do it, Jim. I think
you could do it. That was vandalizing the car to make sure that was insured.
I think Chavez could shock him, man.
You know what? I'm not gonna argue about that. I think, too. I mean, I think that Martinez is up against a very big kid, you know, where I'm not going to say that he's seasoned yet. I'm not going to say that he upped his arsenal, but he's done somewhat enough for me to go, okay, now this is a fight. Now he can make it into a fight. And there's a strong possibility he could upset Sergio Martinez. You know, 2 years ago, even last year, we all would have been saying this was just too rushed, too fast. Dean, I'm gonna put you on hold, brother, because we got to get our first guest with us here on Leaving the Ring. Okay. So I'll put you on hold, brother. Let's get George. George, you with us, brother?
Yes, sir.
So we'll have Gabriel. Gabriel, you're with us still, right?
I am. I'm just kind of sad. I'm just crying silently.
They cry. You're not holding on to that. You're not holding on to that that homemade face of pillow of James Curlin, are you?
I am. I'm like sitting here just gently holding my James Curlin action figure. Going, why?
Why? You could have been one of the greats.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
You could have been that for me. All right. I'll be right back.
Make sure you tune in to Leaving the Ring Live right now. We're going to have Ponce de Leon. Go to the website, leavingtheringradio.com. So if we sound a little funny, we apologize. I'm going off of my tablet and using my phone, doing the switchboard, and my desktop is down. Remember, I've been having some problems with it. Finally, it's out of service completely, but I'm going to have a tech guy come out.
Hello. We're calling in. This is Gabriel Montoya with Leave It in the Ring Radio. Dave, would you like to take this over?
Yes. ¿Podemos hablar con Ponce?
Sí.
Sí, Ponce? ¿Daniel?
Dígame, sí.
¿Qué pasó? ¿Cómo estás? Mi nombre es David Duenes con Gabriel Montoya. Tenemos una interview con Leave It in the Ring Radio ahora.
Sí.
Ok. Nosotros vamos a hablar en inglés y Jorge va a hablar en español, ¿ok?
Okay,
I said it.
I went.
Okay. Hey, George, tell him first off, thank you for taking the time. You know, I know he's still in training camp and he's getting ready for Johnny Gonzalez. Let him know we appreciate him taking the time to speak to us.
Buenas noches, Ponce. Primero que nada, gracias por estar con nosotros en el show y tomar tiempo para darnos una entrevista. Sabemos que estás ahorita en preparaciones para tu pelea contra Johnny Gonzalez.
Sí, ahorita he estado ya en preparación por 5 o 6 semanas ya acá en Big Bear. Acá estoy entrenando y pues preparándome para esta pelea el 15 de septiembre.
He said he's been working hard for about 5 weeks and preparing really hard for this fight.
You know, too, congratulations in his marriage that just happened. I think it was a couple months back. Let me ask him this, you know, has it been difficult for training camp, being that he's a newlywed, even if he's been with the person for quite some time, and, you know, but with marriage and all that, has it been distracting? Has he had to find a new place to discipline himself, a new way to discipline himself, because he's a newlywed at the moment?
Bueno, dice que felicitaciones en tu boda reciente, y pues te quiere preguntar primero que nada si ha sido diferente o a lo mejor un poquito más difícil concentrarse en esta pelea ya que pues estás recién casado.
No, creo que no es nada de difícil. Ya he pasado por muchas preparaciones así. Y pues, con mi esposa yo tengo junto ya 12 años, solamente que nuestra boda fue por la iglesia que fue el año pasado, entonces ya nos conocemos y estamos viviendo juntos por mucho tiempo. Así que no ha sido difícil ya esta preparación para mí.
He says that you know, he's obviously preparing well for the fight. He's been with his wife for about 12 years. It's just that recently he got married in church. But he said it's just normal camp.
Right on, man. Well, congratulations regardless. You know, it's always good to get married in church. Johnny Gonzalez obviously he's been getting himself back in the scenes, been going through a winning streak. He has, Ponce, from the beginning, starting, we knew he had crushing power, but he has brought some tremendous boxing skills. I mean, he gave Broner all he can handle, and a lot of us, including myself, thought he had won against Adrian Broner. What is the concern with Johnny Gonzalez? Because Johnny can box, he's a lefty, and he can definitely crack as well.
Bueno, otra vez te dice felicitaciones en tu matrimonio, y pues hablando de la pelea contra González, él ve que González tiene una racha muy buena de ganadas, y bueno, él también sabe que tú eres muy buen boxeador, que le diste tremenda pelea a Adrian Broner. En su opinión, dice que él te vio ganar esa pelea, y bueno, dice que ¿en qué forma te estás preparando para González y qué es lo más difícil que tú le ves a él?
Yuri González, lo difícil de él es técnicamente, es boxeador, tiene buena técnica y tiene muy buena condición física, entonces pienso que eso va a ser lo más difícil para mí, que va a querer boxearme y no va a querer pelear conmigo, pero voy a tratar de buscar a que se pare a pelear conmigo, si no, pues voy a tener que ir a buscarlo.
He said he's aware that Johnny Gonzalez is a good boxer. He has very good technique and a great stamina. And he's worried that Gonzalez is going to try to outbox him and not give him a fight. So in that case, he's prepared to go and look for the fight.
That answered my question. But all the times that, at least the last three times Gonzalez has lost, it's been stepping up to the next level. And he gets knocked out. Does that give you confidence going forward that you know that all you need to do is land your power? Or is that a trap and you'll get stuck waiting and waiting for a shot that may not come?
Gabriel Montoya te quiere preguntar. Dice que en las tres pérdidas que ha tenido Johnny González ha sido contra buena competencia o el próximo nivel de la competencia. Te quiere preguntar si tú tienes, eso te da confianza a ti para tratar de ponerle una trampa y usar tu poder para pararlo, o cómo te sientes tú?
Pues sí, él sabemos que tiene un buen nivel, ha peleado con los mejores del mundo. Yo también he peleado con los mejores y yo me considero que estoy ahí entre los mejores del mundo, y a cualquiera le puedo una buena pelea, a cualquiera le puedo ganar ahí. Para mí, no estoy viendo mis ventajas ni nada de eso, yo solamente estoy viendo mis desventajas, todo eso, para mejorar en eso y mejorar eso arriba del ring.
He said he definitely feels like one of the best in the world, and he feels that he's out at that level, he's not really looking at what advantages he has over Gonzalez. He's looking to improve on his disadvantages.
Does he, of his opponents, and if he has, does he see a different Johnny Gonzalez now that he's been with Nacho Beristain? Is he the same guy, just with more experience?
Te quiero preguntar si tú ves algo diferente que trae Johnny Gonzalez desde que ha estado entrenando con Nacho Beristain, o tú lo ves igual que siempre.
Ahora lo veo con más confianza desde que está con Beristain. Lo veo que ya tiene más defensa y se ha puesto mejor. Así que ahora lo voy a agarrar en su mejor momento y así lo voy a ganar en su mejor momento.
He said he sees him with more confidence, that he shows more confidence and better defensive skills, and that he acknowledges that he definitely looks better. But for him, that's better, because he said he wants to beat him at his best and win the fight.
You know, I want to correct myself. It's him that he's a southpaw. I was thinking about Johnny Gonzalez, how he's had trouble with southpaws in his past, in his career. Is he looking at tape of when Johnny's had problems with southpaw fighters, or does he concentrate more on what he's done with his victories leading into this fight?
Él entiende que tú eres un peleador zurdo y que Johnny Gonzalez ha tenido problemas con un peleador zurdo. ¿Eso es algo que tú estás viendo como una ventaja, o simplemente tú estás concentrado en hacer mejor trabajo en tus desventajas?
Sí, yo digo mi desventaja, mis ventajas, no me fijo en eso, sino todas mis desventajas, y eso lo estoy mejorando. La ventaja, pues, ya la sabré aprovechar, pero no me fijo en eso.
He acknowledges that that he has some advantages, but he's really concentrating on just bringing up that level and improving on his disadvantages.
What do you think he's got to do the most? Do you think that he has to go after Johnny Gonzalez and kind of taste what he has to offer in power-wise so that he knows what to do within the seconds and minutes running into the fight? Or does he stay back and does he allow some moments there to fill each other out?
Él dice que ¿cuál es tu plan si tú piensas entrar en la pelea y en los primeros segundos ir y probar a ver qué tanto tiene poder, tiene pegada, o tú quieres simplemente que la pelea se dé y se vaya dando los rounds, yendo los rounds y esperar un buen momento?
Así es. Yo ahorita no estoy pensando en... Estoy pensando ir hacia el frente, atacarlo rápidamente, pero vamos a ver qué es lo que trae entre mente, entre manos él y tratar de contrarrestarle esa estrategia que traiga él.
He's looking to counterattack, to counter any attacks from Johnny Gonzalez and try to get a taste to see what he brings in the ring.
I'm curious, you know, he was very upset after the Broner fight, and we had talked about it. Everybody felt that he won. But there was a sense that, you know, Broner was the future star, and he was kind of brought in to lose, you know, to be frank. Does he feel that in this fight, even though, you know, Johnny's the champion, you're both established names kind of on the same level. Do you feel it's a level playing field, this fight, and it's just going to come down to who's the better man that night?
Dice que después de la pelea contra Broner, tú estabas muy, muy disgustado con lo que pasó y que tal vez en esa noche lo que pensaban que llevaba el nombre Broner ganó la pelea. Pero ¿cómo te sientes tú en esta pelea con Johnny Gonzalez? ¿Piensas tú que los dos tienen también el mismo nivel, la misma fama, el mismo nombre? ¿Tienes alguna preocupación?
No, estamos a los niveles, eso no me fijo yo en qué nivel está ni nada. Yo sé que la afición, gente que lo siga, no va a estar arriba del ring, solamente va a estar él. Así que yo pienso que va a estar dividida ahí la porra, porque pues yo me he hecho mi carrera acá en Estados Unidos, él en México, y pienso que pues ese día vamos a estar un poco más divididos, tal vez tenga un poco más de gente a mi favor.
He feels like he has level playing field, and you know, he's aware that he has Johnny Gonzalez has his fans and he has his own fans, but the fans are not going to be inside the ring. If anything, he feels that he might have an advantage as far as the fans, because he's fought more in the U.S. And that night they're going to have a divided fan following.
I got one more for him. You know, being that he has developed more and more. He strikes me as a guy that didn't completely fall in love with his power, that he understood that power alone was not going to get him to the top. Is that a fair assessment?
Dice que David dice que él ha visto que has cambiado un poco en tu estilo, como que has madurado un poco más, y que entiendes de que no solamente la pegada te va a ganar las peleas, que necesitabas aprender un poco más. ¿Qué opinas tú de eso?
Sí, así es, ya tantas experiencias que tengo, tantas peleas, y pues eso es el aprendizaje, no pasarme mi pegada solamente, sino ganar técnicamente como lo he hecho en las últimas peleas.
He said, yeah, he's definitely aware of that, and he understands he's gained experience in his many fights that he had. And he has learned not to rely just on power, but also win the fights, you know, by having good technique.
32 years old, you've had 47 fights. I'm not saying that you're old or anything.
Yeah, are we still there?
Can you cut off?
I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you keep coming in and out. Go ahead. Go ahead, Gabe. What's your question? Did we lose Gabriel? George?
I think so. Yeah, you can go ahead with your question, Dave.
Well, he was with Gabriel, so we lost them both here. I didn't hear him. It was some dead silence, and he thought I had cut him off, and I was like, no, I didn't. There was nothing coming through. So obviously it was his phone. See him when he gets back in, call in. You know what I like about Muncie, man? He's so calm and he's so collective, you know? He's a guy that you could see, for a guy that punches with so much force, man, he's got like a certain calmness about him, man, that, you know, I don't know, a little scary to see a guy that knows he can hit that hard, but at the same time, just be that calm.
Absolutely, and he has a great story. I don't know if many fans are aware of you know how he got into boxing, but you know just the way he grew up and just to be lucky to be alive. I mean, he told me a story once about how you know he lost some of his brothers and friends you know growing up in like in the altitudes in the mountain and you know he almost didn't make it. So to come all that way and just you know be able to box at this level, it's amazing.
Absolutely. You know, yeah, and I've heard his story. I mean, and a lot of fight fans don't even know that, you know, he's been in with some really tough sparrings in Maywood, you know. This guy's a warrior, you know. He's one of those guys that you would think that would have been shop worn, you know. He would have left his past prime in the ring in Maywood, but he's actually gotten better and just better and better, and that's kind of helped him out fighting some real tough fights in Maywood.
Yeah, absolutely. There must be something in the water because all these Mexican fighters just keep getting better as they age. I mean, look at Juan Manuel Marquez, you know, Johnny Gonzalez, I mean, making that turnaround of his career. At one point, I thought he was done, and he comes back and is knocking everyone out, and it's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm trying to tell Gabriel my Skype on top, my tab doesn't do multiple calls. It has to do with his phone. Because he's not getting good reception in his house with his cell phone. So he's got to call in, unfortunately. Anyways, fight fans, you want to call in, certainly can. You can call 347-205-7598 here on Leaving Ring. Speak to myself, Dave Duenas, or my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, once he gets back on the line. And you got to get past Mr. David Chen. So, see if we can get Gabriel back on the line here on Leaving the Ring. Unfortunately, I can't do multiple calls on Skype here. Anyways, call in. Let's talk about some fights, upcoming fights. We got Andre Ward and Chad Dawson. We had Chad Dawson a while back here on Leaving the Ring talking, and I got to tell you, man, he got us pumped up a little bit on what he had to say. A little concerned. The rumor out there was that he got dropped. He got knocked out. Not dropped. He got knocked out in sparring. I'm not sure how much truth was that there to it, but we're going to have John Scully, the Iceman, here with us on Leaving the Ring. He's definitely going to be able to clear the rumors. You know, the thing is that when you hear something like that with Chad Dawson, it does raise a red flag. It definitely can be somewhat in some truth. Was he knocked out? Probably not. But was he dropped? Probably. When you're concentrating on losing weight, when you're concentrating on losing weight and not concentrating on what you're supposed to be doing, it could be difficult, man. You do damage the muscle, jumping up and down in the weight. You know, when you become comfortable at a certain weight and you decide to go back down, we've seen this multiple times, you know, where it ends up damaging a fighter. They're not the same. They don't react the same. It's almost like they lost years in between losing that weight. So there is a proper way of losing weight. There's a proper way of not, you know, shrinking your muscles or damaging your muscles and your reflexes. You know, there's a certain way of doing things, but those certain ways obviously have to take months and months. You know, when Not Hopkins did it. When he jumped up in weight and he came back, he was ready in training mode of getting himself back to a smaller weight class. You know, it wasn't like a jump and then come back, you know. Those are things that fighters have to look into. Roy Jones was obviously one guy that didn't look into it. You know, he jumped up to fight John Ruiz as a heavyweight. Then when he dropped back down, we saw what happened when he fought Antonio Tarver. The first fight, he was getting beaten up. He got beat up. It seemed to me like a big span of his life was taken away from him when he did that. Am I wrong? I don't know. What do you think, George?
It's definitely something to worry about. I mean, Chad Dawson is still young. He might be able to get away with it. To be honest, I didn't like the fact that he was moving down. You know, the fight could have been made.
I didn't like that either, man. I also believe we got my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, man. What's up, brother? You there?
I am back.
I can't get multiple calls on this tablet for some reason. It won't let me do it. It's telling me that if I do, I have to hang up on the first call that I'm with in order to patch in another person. It's not like the desktop where you can do multiple people.
Bizarre.
So,
well,
I know.
Set your desktop on fire next time I see it. I hate that computer. I looked at it. I was like, you've been the source of a lot of problems in my life. When I was there at your house, like staring that computer down.
Well, but that's fine. We'll move on. Unless you want to call him and see if he will still run with us.
Shall I get in Mr. Scully? He said to call him at 6 o'clock.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think a lot of people want to hear Mr. Scully himself. George, thanks again, brother, for taking the time and doing the translation for us here on Leave the Ring.
All right, guys. Don't forget my plug.
Órale. You know it. George Jimenez, one of the hosts of Noche de Boxeo on Monday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern time. So I believe Gabriel is going to be calling in the trainer chat doctor, Mr. John Van Scully.
Yeah, I mean, if you're feeling plugged, you know, just have a set.
3 hours of boxing talk here on Leave the Ring. Myself, Dave Duenas, and Mr. Gabriel Montoya. We're going to be in Riverside September 8th. Sitting down with the trainer of Henry Ramirez, who's got his fighter going to be getting in with 150-pound, I don't know if I want to say king, but 150-pound contender with the belt, Saúl Canelo Álvarez. He's jumping up in two weights to face Canelo Álvarez after failed attempts of getting other fighters in the ring with Canelo Álvarez, you know, but rather than still continuing looking at 154, they decided to try to pick on the little guy, which is the Riverside Rocky. I don't know if they're going to be really able to bully Josecito Lopez. This kid's here to fight, man. You know, he may be a little small, just like the way Victor Ortiz and his team thought. They thought, we're getting a guy to face, to just keep ourselves busy. Push him around before leading in, because originally it was Victor Ortiz who was going to be fighting Saúl Canelo Álvarez, and we saw what happened, man. Josecito was a kid that was not willing to give up the red ball. You know, that little red ball that he had and we used to play with in elementary, the dodgeball. Didn't want to give it up.
Well, I'm here, speaking of super fights coming up, we were talking earlier, John, about the lack of good fights or any fights in August. In the second week of September, September 8th at the Oracle, it's going to be a major fight. It's going to be a very exciting fight, in my opinion. Andre Ward taking on Chad Dawson for all the marbles or belts. I don't think any red balls are on the line. But we're welcoming here the trainer of Chad Dawson, Mr. Ice, John Scully. Welcome to the show, John. How are you?
Thank you. I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
Hey, John, how are you, brother?
Hey, how you doing?
I hate to hit you with the cliche question, so I'm going to hit it. I'm going to add a twist to it.
Okay.
How's training camp been going? And I know you're a guy that likes the social media, so I'm sure you saw the rumor thrown out there that Chad has been knocked out in training camp. So how's training camp, and is that true?
Listen, I'll tell you something. I'm very excited about the fight, and part of the reason
is because of Chad, because of Chad's attitude, his level of confidence. We actually just finished training about 10 minutes ago, and we were up there in the room, you know, working out, and he should look at himself in the mirror, and he's talking about how good he feels, and he just feels so good. He feels so confident. It's kind of like with the Hopkins fight. Actually, in a way, it's even more like with the Hopkins fight. And I'm actually telling him, hey, you know, we still got a real tough opponent in front of us. Let's not overlook him. And he's like, no, I'm not overlooking him. I'm just saying, I feel really confident. I feel really good. I'm enthused by the level of his confidence. Because the fact of the matter is, I've been with fighters, and, you know, I kind of knew going into the fight that they weren't, you know, 100% really confident in themselves. I mean, I myself have went into fights where I wasn't confident, and it just wasn't a good feeling. And I'm sure my trainers, you know, fed off that in a negative way. And with Chad, I mean, I got to say, right now I'm feeling really, really excited about the fight. As far as the knocking down and all that kind of stuff, I mean, listen, we're in our camp. We have a very tight-knit group of people. Nobody's allowed in the camp. There's nobody here but us, just a few people. So rumors like that, stories like that have been going around. I remember they used to say that every fight, even when I was a kid, I vaguely remember it, but I've read about it where they said, oh, Ali got knocked down. And, you know, that I guess they did it, spread the rumor because it drew interest in the fight and it sold tickets and that type of thing. But, you know, we're here. There's nobody here. If anything, if Chad got hit in the head with a brick, nobody would know about it with us. No one out on the outside would ever find out anything. So no, nothing happened. You know, if anybody says it, you know, I'd love to hear the source of that rumor and say, all right, bring them to us. Let's go on to Kick Film and let's talk to this person face to face. Let me
right.
Let me hear their story. Yeah, you know, I mean, I'd love that, but I'm sure we're never going to know who started the rumor. It's always, you know, going to be lingering somewhere. But if somebody wants to come and come to us and tell us that they're the ones that said it, and they can describe the situation, tell us what the gym looks like, you know, that'll be good. We could do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the nature of this business, right? I think boxing is where the phrase, hey, don't tell anybody, but I think that phrase originated in our sport, you know. Everybody.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, again, I remember, like I said, I read Muhammad Ali's book, and he said, he admitted that there were times before, like I remember one fight was with Richard Dunn, and ticket sales were lagging, so they put out a rumor that Muhammad Ali got knocked down like 10 days before the fight, just simply for the fact that they figured it would sell tickets. People would say, man, maybe Ali's slipping, maybe this Dunn has a chance here, and, you know, they were hoping more people would watch the fight than they'd originally planned to. So, yeah, that type of stuff has been going on for years. And, you know, and here's another thing on top of all that. I mean, anything happens in the gym, it's just the gym. It means nothing. I mean, to be honest with you, and I won't name names, but I mean, I've seen champions and top-rated guys annihilated in the gym. I saw a guy ranked number 2 in the world get knocked out conscious by a club fighter with a record of like 6-7. I saw it with my own eyes. I was standing right next to the ring. Guy went out sleeping unconscious like he got shot with a 22. You know, things happen. But all that matters is fight night. And believe me, I'm talking to Chad a half hour ago. This guy is feeling very good. He's ready to put on a show.
When you look at the both guys, like, side by side, I mean, they both present such particular puzzles. You know, Chad's a big, strong guy. He's got power, athleticism, experience more than anything, and that's, he's a southpaw. And then you look at Andre, and he's like a Swiss Army knife. He's got all kinds of different things he does. He likes to fight on the inside. He's not afraid to smother you. He's not afraid to kind of move away from you and slow the action down. Just look at it from an outsider's, how do you match these guys up? And do you think that all of your strengths are going to outweigh his in this fight? Do you?
My gut feeling is that they will, yes. I mean, you know, and again, I'm very much a realist. I'll say this. Who knows? You know, who knows what's going to happen? You know,
yeah.
One guy might have just a crazy style that just stylistically he just doesn't match up well with the other guy for whatever reason. You know, Ali had all kinds of trouble with Ken Norton, but he beat all the guys that beat Norton. It was just a crazy thing. But I think Chad, I always say Chad is the type of guy people generally have to deal with him more than he has to deal with them. That's been the case in the majority of his fights. And I think Andre Ward, to his credit, in his big fights, you know, I've watched all his big fights in the tournament, he's been able to dictate what happens in the ring. He almost, it's almost like he mesmerizes these guys, you know, with the swinging watch there. You know, he hypnotizes them, and they don't fight their fight. None of them, Fosh didn't, none of them. The only one who came close was Bika, and he did, you know, he wasn't stylistically pretty, but he did a good job. I think he'll be facing a guy in Chad who you're going to have to do more than that to stop him from implementing his game plan.
You know, I like what you said about Andre Ward. You know, he's used to dictating a fight. And, you know, a long time ago, a couple of turns have said this to me, you sometimes win the fight before you step into the ring. And in my opinion, you guys kind of let him win this fight outside the ring already by allowing him to dictate the weight and the place where you guys are going to be facing each other.
Right. I mean, I'll tell you this much. Honestly, like, you know, if it was up to me, it certainly wouldn't be in Oakland. You know, you don't want to go there, and because judges are human and you don't want them to be, you know, influenced by something that's not actually happening. You know, I've been in fights where, you know, the other guy throws a punch and doesn't even hit you. You know, I've been, like, I'm fighting a guy, and he almost hits me. And I remember a fight one time I was in the guy's hometown, and the guy missed me, and the crowd went crazy. And I actually turned and yelled out, I said, he missed me. He missed me. He didn't hit me, you know, because I just wanted people to know. But, you know, there's nothing we could do. But as far as the weight, I mean, it's the craziest thing because fighters generally don't move down the weight. I understand that. I know that it's very rarely, if ever, been done successfully. But I'm telling you, Chad wanted to do this. Like, he wanted to go. He asked me about, it must have been 6 or 7 months ago, he asked me, he goes, oh, what do you think about me going down to 68? He never mentioned Ward. He never mentioned anybody. He just said, you know, I've been thinking about it for a while. And one thing that I didn't know is, see, he has a strength coach who's also his nutritionist and the guy that cooks for him and everything. So when I train Chad, I'm just training the boxing and the mentality part of it. I don't deal with the nutrition or the food or anything. You know, that's not my forte. So I just assumed, like all fighters, that he was eating a very strict regimen and all those type of things. And because I wasn't with him when he eats, you know, I generally go off and do my own thing, and they handle their business. I found out recently that when we fought Hopkins, Chad was literally eating anything he wanted to, like fried foods and all the stuff that you wouldn't eat as a fighter because you're trying to make weight. He said, no, he goes, you don't understand. I've never dieted ever. He goes, I don't diet. He goes, when I fought Tarver and those guys, I was just eating whatever. You know, if I want some fried chicken, I eat some fried chicken. You know, if I want some soda, I'll have some soda. So this is the first time, I guess, in a while or ever that he's actually had his chef preparing the food for him and the proper foods and you know, and another thing that's good, and any trainer and any fighter will tell you that the closer to the fight it gets, the more miserable fighters are. And some fighters are just so literally miserable to be around because they're making weight, they're having to sacrifice. And I actually was kind of waiting for that time to kick in here in this training camp. And I actually said to the trainer, you know, the strength coach today, I was like, man, I said, Chad, you know, he's joking around and stuff, like he's focused, but he's not miserable. And he goes, yeah, because he's eating. He goes, he's not sacrificing, he's not starving himself. So, you know, they have a plan, and apparently, I mean, they're right on schedule. Chad, we took a picture of him last night, actually, because he was in the mirror and he had his shirt off, and you know, he's impressive. You're going to see when he gets on the scale of the weigh, and I believe it's going to be one of those things where people, I think the odds, I actually told my friend that's here in Vegas, I said, you should go, if you're going to bet on Chad, you should go now because the odds are for Ward pretty heavy. And I said, I think after the weigh-in, when the people see Chad on the scale, I think the odds are going to balance out and you won't make as much money. So he's actually, from what I understand, he's on his way over to Caesars tonight so he can put some money on Chad while the odds are still heavy.
I think the mindset for fans right now that are Chad Dawson fans are, you know, Chad's bigger, he's stronger, I think he matches Ward in speed-wise. I think intelligence in the ring, he matches Ward. I think his resume is far more superior, but it's almost like you guys kind of gave that all up. And you know what I mean? You cut it in half. You're coming down in weight. You're coming in the territory he hasn't been in for a while. And you talk about dietary, which sounds great. But at the same time, if you're outside looking in and you heard that, saying that, you know, I never had a diet before. I eat whatever I want. But now I'm banking on diet, doing a dietary because I have to drop weight. Is an Andre Ward fight a fight that you think that he should, that you want to find out if it worked type of deal?
Right. Well, no, when I, like, you understand, like when I say diet, what I mean, I don't mean, like, you know, he's cutting all these foods and not eating that much. And I don't mean, like, what I mean is he's eating a lot of food, but he's eating really good food that's really good for you. You know, the lean meats and the, you know, I don't know the term, the enzymes and all that kind of stuff. But no, he's not going hungry. Like, people associate dieting with, oh, man, he's going hungry, he's not eating. No, I don't mean it like that. I mean, he's eating, he changed his diet, put it that way. He's eating a lot, but he's eating what he's supposed to. And it just makes you feel better. It just subconsciously, psychologically, it just makes you feel better knowing that you're eating something that, you know, is perceived to be much healthier. You know, it just, like, it amazes me about Chad. He's such a natural, gifted athlete that he could excel against Tarver and those guys eating a diet of, you know, just stuff that's just, like, when I was boxing, I couldn't even box and eat this regular everyday food, junk food or whatever, because psychologically it would affect me. Where Chad just did his thing and ate whatever he wanted. So now I think it's actually benefiting him mentally because he's saying to himself, wow, like, if I was that good before, right, imagine how good I'm going to be now that I'm eating all this really healthy stuff. So I think actually the timing of it might actually favor us.
Looking at the fight just style-wise, that's what I'm thinking of, is just in terms of strength and weaknesses. I think he's going to make the weight. I recall Chad talking about 68 for a while now. Even when he first got his belt, he felt more like he was going up to 175, blowing up there, and rather than, you know, he's not one of those guys that's like coming down. But, you know, with Hopkins, it was real specific. I mean, I think the thing we kept talking about was the dirty tactics and the holding, things he does on the inside. Do you think that education that was kind of like the last days of college and now facing a young, fresh guy that kind of fights in a very similar style, he's going to really show what that degree is all about? Do you think it's going to be easier to deal with this time around or just different?
Oh, yeah, no, we definitely got a big taste of it with Hopkins. And, you know, the fact is, if you watch Ward on the inside, I mean, he does a lot of that stuff. I mean, he might not necessarily be blatantly dirty. I, you know, I wouldn't label him necessarily a dirty fighter, but he certainly holds. He holds quite a bit. He grabs you by the arm. And people don't realize, like, sometimes when they see a guy hold someone, it looks like he's just holding them in place. But what a lot of guys do, they hold you and they put a subtle tug on your arm so they can disrupt your shoulder. Maybe, you know, pull your shoulder out of socket. Little things like that guys are masters at on the inside. And, you know, they're trying to damage the soft tissue and things like that. So Chad definitely had a taste of dealing with that, and he certainly showed that he dealt with it very well. And I just, you know, I just feel like he adapts very well. I mean, he's fought many, many, many different styles, you know, with Tarver, with Dawson, with Adam Eck, and Eric Harding, and all these, you know, top fighters. And so far, I mean, the only fight he had trouble, obviously, was with Pascal. But again, I've said many times, I know Chad pretty well, and he certainly wasn't training for that fight. He wasn't ready mentally or physically for that fight, and that was very clear to me in the first round. So I have heard that Ward has actually been watching that video, you know, like to try to form a game plan, which would actually benefit us because that Chad Dawson you'll never see ever again, never.
I've noticed it just in interviewing him the last, you know, for the Hopkins fights, and then now this time around, he just seems, there's just something that's awakened in him, or I don't know what it is.
Well,
he seems more excited, more aggressive. Have you noticed
that? Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about?
Oh, well, listen. Without doubt, I'll tell you. You know, and I don't want to come off like I'm patting myself on the back, or you know, I really don't. You know, because it's him. It is him. But we did it when I first started training again. I had a conversation with him, and this is how it went. It's no secret. I'll tell you exactly what I said. I said, look, I want you to understand something, Chad. A lot of people have criticisms of you. A lot of people say, you know, you're not aggressive enough. You don't fight with enough spirit. You know, you don't look like the fight means everything to you. And he goes, yeah, those people. And I said, listen, the best people to listen to are your critics. The people that don't like you are the only ones that are going to tell you the truth because they want you to know why they don't like you. You know what I mean? Like if you're in school and your worst enemy sees you wearing a really outdated, ugly pair of pants, you can be sure he's going to let everybody know how ridiculous you look because he wants you to know how ridiculous you look, and he's telling the truth. You know, so I said, listen, don't get mad at people when they say that you need to dig down more and you need to be more focused. I said, figure there's a reason they're saying that. And, you know, I think he liked that. I think he liked the, you know, looking at it from that angle. And, you know, whether that influenced him or not, I do know that he's as you say, he's shown more focus. I mean, anyone who doesn't see that is just not a fan of Chad Dawson. They don't want to give him any credit. But clearly in both Hopkins fights, he was very willing, and it was obvious he was trying to make the fight. He wanted to fight. He wanted to get into it. And he didn't want to run. He didn't want to move a lot. He wanted to fight, and that's what people have been waiting to see from him.
It's an exuberance, you know, when he speaks. You know, he seems excited about the fight to come. Like I remember the Diakonu fight, and they announced him as the winner, and his face didn't change. Like, he didn't seem up or down about
it.
You know,
he didn't. Believe me, you're 100% right. And another thing, I kind of told him. And again, I don't know if he's doing that because I told him these things. But I'm just telling you that I agree with what you're saying. I told him one time. I remember saying, I said, you know, you gotta love boxing like you did when you were 12. You know, I said the most fun you're gonna have playing baseball isn't when you're in the major leagues. It's when you're 15 and you and your friends are in the park. And just, you know, you love baseball, and you're imagining that you're Reggie Jackson. You know, you're at the plate, and you're pretending you're Reggie, and it's the, you know, seventh game of the World Series. And I think he's beginning to like boxing again. And I think his newfound, you know, he's more famous and he's more well known. And I think he likes that. I think he likes all that comes with that. And I'll give you an example. When we first got here, We went out for his birthday to the Palms, and there's this restaurant, I think it's called Nine. It's in the Palms, and I guess a lot of famous people go there and eat and hang out on the weekends. And so we were in there eating, and all of a sudden you hear this this voice across the room, across the restaurant, and he's going, "Bad Chad Dawson." And the guy's yelling it. Everybody in the restaurant can hear him. And we look up, and it was Charlie Murphy. And Charlie Murphy recognized Chad from across the thing, and he comes over with his friend. Charlie Murphy was so excited to meet Chad, he wouldn't leave. He was there for like a half an hour, and Chad was excited to meet him. And I'm telling him, I said, "Chad, look at that." I said, "He's more excited to meet you than you are to meet him." And I said, "You're a somebody. You got to realize that people are waiting to see what you're going to do. You're a some people care." I said, "You have to show the people how good you are because it matters." And, you know, he was actually surprised that Charlie Murphy even knew who he was. And, you know, I thought that was kind of funny because, you know, everybody knows who he is pretty much.
That's funny.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what do you, so have you basically looked at just the Super 6 fights in order for, you know, to prepare for war? If he's looking at your losses.
Pretty much, because I looked at those mainly because, you know, obviously it was the best competition he was facing, but also probably the most pressure that he was under. So I wanted to see how well he fought under pressure against top-flight guys. And, you know, I looked at a few older things. I mean, there was one fight when he was younger. I believe it was Kenny Kost and, you know, the kid from Minnesota. And,
yeah,
on the one hand, the kid really hurt Andre bad. Like when he went,
right.
When Andre went down, you know, he was – they may deny it now, but I know what I'm looking at. When he was on the ground, I mean, he was very dazed.
So I look at that on the one hand, but I also look at that, he was younger and he wasn't the fighter he is now. So as a general rule, I watched the most recent fights.
What do you see in that progression? Did you see a growth or a change, or is it just a general adaptability? When I watch him, I don't see a lot of patterns to what he does. More of a trained eye probably does. Do you see things that happen over and over again? Because I know he always wants to be that guy that's, I have no style, like Bruce Lee, just flow and see what
right.
the moment needs.
I think he
adapts, but he also kind of dictates what happens. He's in and out. He's almost like, to me, he wants to be close enough to you where you think you can hit him, but then he's far enough away where you actually can't. And when you go to hit him, he's gone. But he doesn't run. He just kind of steps back, and he keeps his just out of, like a butterfly. He keeps just out of range. And then on the inside, all of a sudden, he just turns up the intensity, and he's very aggressive, and physically and mentally, he's aggressive. And he makes you fight, then he holds you, then he grabs you. So he does a lot of different things, but he does a lot of similar things at the same time. You know what I mean? Like he's it's crazy, but as a trainer, in the one hand, he's hard to figure out because he's getting all these guys to fight his fight. And it's not necessarily really visible as to why they're doing that. But by the same token, he's not doing a variety of, amazing things. Like at super middleweight, when I watched, I always bring up, for me, the excellence of 168 was a prime Roy Jones and a prime James Toney. And, when I watched them, I'm like, wow, these guys, they're doing this and they're doing that. And, oh, look at that. And, oh, look at this. And with Andre, he's almost like a guy, nothing stands out other than his mental state. But as far as physically and stuff he actually does, nothing stands out where you're like, blown away. Like, wow, this guy's unbelievable. Roy Jones was unbelievable. I wouldn't necessarily say Andre's unbelievable, but he certainly is effective. I mean, he makes – his strength is that he makes people fight his fight. They fall into his fight.
I like that. I like that there.
Yeah,
I think
that's right on the money.
You think, John, though, that this is a fight where it really falls on who decides to go first, in that first round, who decides to get a little eager? Or is it one of these kind of fights that you sit back and you play chessmate with the guy?
For me, my gut feeling, processing everything and watching it, I would think, especially with the overall situation, and I don't mean just Andre as a fighter, but I just mean the perception and the situation with HBO and being in Oakland, I think we would need to establish ourselves quicker than maybe we normally do. And with Hopkins, he did. He had established himself relatively quickly. But I'd like to establish ourselves, make our presence known right away. I don't want to get into a thing where it's too much of a chess match and a thinking man's game, because before you know it, it's the eighth round and there's so many close rounds and, one guy's probably getting the benefit of the doubt and the majority of them, if not all of them. And then you're under the gun, then you're under the clock, and you don't want to necessarily be in that position. So I'd rather, I don't want to come out like gangbusters, but I'd rather kind of set a tone early on that we're here. We're here and we're a champion, and we're coming to win, and we're not like the other guys. Not that they didn't come to win, but they didn't necessarily have the physicality and the tools to do so.
Yeah, because I've seen it time after, where you see the guy go after the hometown fighter, and whatever the hometown fighter does, the crowd is going to roar and it's going to cheer, and it's almost like the crowd beat the opponent, where they end up shutting down or being discouraged because they waited so long, so they almost like just left the fight a long time ago before it even started.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. And, you know, fighters, I'll get on that end, I'll say this. Chad, for some reason, you know, people have mistaken him, and I knew this, and this is why I told him, listen to your critics, because, you know, with his, he has a passive demeanor about him. You know, he's very calm, he doesn't get flustered, he doesn't talk trash, so people think that he's sleeping half the time. You know, they think he's not into it. And I told him, I said, you know, but the thing is, he is into it. He's not verbal about it. But when he comes to fight, he's very intense. Sometimes he took rounds off because he was, you know, I would say kind of like Roy Jones in his prime when Roy was winning rounds so easily against certain guys that he, you know, he kind of lost a little bit of focus or a little bit of push because he figured, you know, I don't need to push 100% with this guy because I'm already going to beat him anyway. You know, and Andre, I think Andre pushes pretty much all the time, no matter if he's winning by a lot or a little. So again, I think Chad will start out a little quicker, and the fans will see that this is not the average guy that's come to Oakland. And you know, that brings up another point. The fact is, Andre, and I'm not trying to take anything from as a fighter. I'm just saying, you know, for a tournament like the Super Six that theoretically would be a very unbiased tournament, it certainly obviously wasn't. I mean, all the fights were in Oakland, pretty much, except the final fight was in Atlantic City, the United States, against a guy from England, so it might as well have been in Oakland. So Andre's had a certain amount of comfort level that he's got accustomed to. We need to get him out of that. We need to let the people feel, not just see, but feel that this is a different guy. They're going to watch the fight and go, okay, you know, that guy from England, he didn't come out like this. And I want Andre to feel that, and I want everyone to feel that, and I want Chad to feel that. And after a few rounds of that, I think we'll know, everybody's going to know, this is going to be a tough fight for everyone involved.
Yeah, I think just listening to you and thinking about it, it's going to take a special man to go into Oakland and beat a guy like Andre Ward, who hasn't lost since he was 11. You know, he's our last gold medal winner.
Right.
But I think it comes down to coming out there and that hard jab and a left hand. And I'm here.
You're right. You've got to. You know, you have to. You can't come in as a guy who just wants to be a part of the show. You know what I mean? You have to run in the middle of the stage. You know, really, you got to be in the middle, jump from the audience, run on the stage, and go, hey, I'm here too. You know, look at me too here. And, you know, and I think that's going to be a big edge for us because the fact is Andre hasn't, you know, he's had, you know, those guys, I mean, they weren't easy fights, but he didn't have that visible threat against him. You know, he kind of, like, as I said in an interview recently, like, he was leading the band in all those fights in Oakland and you know, near Oakland in California. He was leading the band. Everything was centered around him, and it was obvious. Like, if you didn't know boxing and you just watched the fight, you'd go, well, it seems like that guy, you know, he's more in charge. He looks like he's in charge. You know, the other guys looked like they were just kind of there. I think with Chad, just like with the Hopkins fight, and the Hopkins fight was a good preview because being in Atlantic City is basically being in Philadelphia. It's only 25 minutes away. And the crowd was certainly overwhelmingly in Hopkins' favor. I was actually kind of surprised at how much of a difference it was. You know, the people were really, really for Hopkins. I mean, very few people in the arena that night were for Chad. And Chad, obviously, it didn't faze him in the least. It might have even actually helped him. And so, luckily, happily, I think Chad might actually be the type of guy when he goes to Oakland and he hears, I think the worse it is verbally and noise-wise, I think the better it'll be for us.
I can't wait, man. Yeah, I'm very excited about this fight.
I'm excited. I mean, it's going to be, you know, I'm actually, after all the, you know, the previews and everything, I'll actually be disappointed if people will, who will be for Chad. Like, if there was any people, which I know there won't be, but if there was people in the crowd cheering for Chad, I might actually be a little disappointed. I'm kind of geared up for facing that, and I kind of like the feeling that it's going to give us when we realize that nobody wants us to win, and I think it's going to help Chad more than hurt him.
Yeah, winning at home, too, is always a tough thing to do. there's a lot more pressure on Andre in that sense than there is on Chad. You can always go back to 175. You're still the man there. But Andre's kind of drawn his line in the sand. I'm at 168, and I'm at home. And this is his big moment to step out. It's both of their big moments, but I think there's more pressure there.
Well, John, without a doubt. Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah.
I'm glad you recognize that.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting fight. You know, as some people that are down on it, I don't see how you possibly could be. I think it's going to be a really good fight. I don't think it's going to be boring. I think for Chad to win, it can't be boring. He's got to do more than that.
Right.
So, and I'm picking him to win, so that I think that's what's going to happen. Well, John, I really appreciate you coming on at such short notice, and just I kind of hit you spur of the moment, but I really appreciate it, man, and good luck next week.
Thank you, and I'll see you there, right?
I'm not sure if I'm going to make it up. I'm still working that out. They don't pay my travel expenses. I got to go to Vegas the next week. I know. I'll work it out. I'll see what happens.
All right, well, let me know. Maybe I'll see you there. I'll see you at some point.
Yeah, I got to get a pool game in. Apparently, I didn't know you played as well. So.
Well, I'm not as good as Russ, believe me. Russ is...
we should play for money then.
I want to keep my money. Now, have you played Rush yet? Have you actually played him?
Yeah, he came through. He destroyed me. I thought I was a pretty good player.
I was going to say, because if he doesn't destroy people, he's like a fighter. Like, if he doesn't win big, he's got to go play. Like, you know, he's this freaking guy. He brings his, he's got the little chalk thing on his belt. You know, he's one of those guys.
He has the equipment.
You should never play with a guy that has a thing of chalk hooked to his belt. You know, any guy who goes through the trouble to do that is probably pretty good.
He busted that thing out, and, you know, we go to the trunk, and he's got like a selection of, you know, of things, you know, like Batman, but with pool sticks, you know. And I'm like, all right, okay, we're going to play. And he won't play, you know, I play 8-ball. I'm old school. He plays only 9-ball or snooker. And he was...
Yeah, right.
Like, I kind of bugged him about it, and he was like, well, fine, we can play an 8-ball game. And I'm like, shit, I don't want to play if you want to be like that, you know. We'll do the 9-ball.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, he just worked me over, like, every psychologically, game-wise, it was brutal.
Let me explain something to you. This guy has a snooker table in his gym.
Wow.
Did you know that? He's got
a
snooker table in the gym. When he's done, he'll stay there till 9, 10 at night playing snooker in the gym.
Wow. That's what I'm up against. Wow.
Yeah. You're up against a ringer, buddy.
Wow. I'm going to be ready for him this time. I've been practicing. I'm the same way about my pool. You beat me at it, especially the way he did, handily. I gotta get my revenge. Well, John, hopefully I'll see you next week, and if not, I'll still, you know, you guys will be in my thoughts. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, I appreciate it. All right.
All right, John. You take care. And have a good night.
Thank you.
Thanks,
guys. Thank you.
All right,
buddy.
Yeah. Well, there you go, John the Iceman Scully. You're talking boxing with us on Leave It Ring with about his fighter Chad the Bad Dawson. He fights fighting September 8th against Andre S.O.G. Ward at the Orca. For a moment, I almost got this radio show almost became a pool hall show.
What the hell? I'm telling you, it was violent. You know, I lost 12-3, man. I'm not happy about it.
We almost got our money taken away from us on Saturday night, you know, playing some pool. Turned out to be that one of the people that wanted to play us actually wins trophies. And I was talking smack to them, remember that earlier, but then I, you know, had to step back and tell them. I said I was the king of pocket pool, not 8-ball pool, pocket pool. So, but hey, Gabe, you played pretty good, brother. Those sticks were horrendous, though.
It was like playing with broomsticks. Yeah. No, I could play on a bar table pretty well. But that was the whole thing. I trained all wrong for Russ. I figured it out this time. He plays on regular pool tables. You get me in a bar room and I'm dangerous. But when you get on the big ones, it's like being on an ocean. I don't know. So we're gonna be calling in Sergio Martinez tonight. At 7:30 sharp, right before he's got something to do with HBO. But in between there, let's get some fight fans back on. We haven't I don't think we've taken enough calls. Like you said, we missed that one day this month, and it feels like we were gone like a month.
It does. It really does, man. You know, when we skip here and there, it just ends up feeling like that. You know, we haven't been around. So we're back. 347-215-7598 here on Leaving the Ring. Call in. Let's talk some boxing. 3 hours of boxing talk. You relax. Grab a beer. Let's talk some boxing here with myself, Dave Duenas, Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chan. We're going to be in Riverside, California with Henry Ramirez and Josecito and the rest of the camp. So be sure to tune in. It's going to be Ustream. Yes, they do have internet over there. We're going to be out there chopping it up with them and talking strategy about their upcoming fight, September 15th in Las Vegas, against Saul Canelo Alvarez. And then hopefully probably go play some pool with a couple of real pool sticks here, Gabe. The pool stick that place was just – it was like playing with tree branches, you know?
Seriously. That place was, you know, that was like the Last Chance Saloon, you know? What are you going to do?
You know? And one of the kind of guys that the more I drink, the better I get. You know, I don't know. I end up focusing a lot more, and them sticks they made me feel drunk.
That was hilarious.
Oh man! Anyways, shout out to everybody that said what's up to us at Solo Boxeo, you know, came up to us and talked boxing. I mean, we were talking boxing before the event started. We were there early. And fight fans were rolling through, and they stopped, and they were chopping it up with myself and Gabriel, and, man, had some great conversations about upcoming fights. You know, some people asking me about, you know, Michael Alvarado versus Brandon Rios. What is my thoughts? The only one word I can come up with was war. That's going to be war, you know. And Ponce de Leon, who we had on a little earlier with us facing Johnny Gonzalez, you know, the more I think about that fight, the more, man, I'm just like, you know what, I can't wait for that fight to happen. I mean, you know, I remember at one point we wrote off Johnny Gonzalez. You know, we just thought that we saw the end of his better days. And guess what? He surprises us. A lot of these Mexican fighters are surprising us, you know. They're, like, reviving themselves. They're, like, going back and to this drawing board, not adding to what – well, maybe adding a little bit where it keeps them long enough into the game. You know, but Johnny being with Nacho, we've seen some changes. I mean, he used to have problems with southpaws. You know, he didn't know where to put his feet at. He was putting his feet at an angle where the southpaw fighter was able to really get in their short left and connect. We're seeing some correction there. But is it going to be enough against a guy like Ponce de Leon, who himself in his own right has improved, Gabriel? I don't know. You know, Ponce to me, he just seems to get better and better and better, and he seems like he's more comfortable being a boxer puncher.
Yeah, no, I really like to me, Gonzalez just fits really well with Nacho Beristain and his whole philosophy, the athletic boxer puncher, the guy that's kind of rangy, can move. He's got some speed to him and some athleticism, so he can kind of bounce around and use all those things in order to set up his power. And then all of it is in a very streamlined boxing school. Nobody throws an uppercut or a jab quite like a Beristain fighter. I mean, Gonzalez just fits the bill perfectly. So I'm not really that – I mean, I thought, you know, he was kind of shop-worn, and he'd been stopped, obviously, three times. It might have been it, but then he's been on a long stretch and slowly rehabbed him and kept him active, and look at him now. You know, I lean towards him in this fight. I think, I don't know, Ponce is going to have to get after it, but he's a guy that doesn't have a lot of athleticism. He's, you know, he's not the quickest on his feet. He's a sharpshooter. He's hoping to land that counter shot that you just don't see coming that puts your lights out. He's learned how to box a little bit more, use his jab, and certainly range he understands, but I expect Gonzalez to be outboxing him and move from the outside. Like his
fear,
I think, is what's going to happen. You know,
I don't know, man. I'm going to have to disagree with you on that one. I mean, I think that Ponce is a little bit more smarter than giving credit. I mean, here's a guy that should have been blown out. Here's a guy that doesn't do everything right. You know, I think you got it right. He's not the quickest dude. He's not quick feet. His feet are not that quick. But he seems to work very well with the tools that are given to him. I mean, with Broner, it was it was obvious Broner was having problems with this guy. I'm not sure if Johnny's going to be able to really get everything that he's worked with Nacho and be able to use it against Ponce de Leon because of his awkwardness, you know. And the thing with Ponce, that awkwardness works for him so well that he plays it so well. It's an interesting fight. I really like this fight a whole lot, man. To me, it's all about Johnny Gonzalez. If he figures out Ponce de Leon, he figures out his timing and his movement, then absolutely, I can see a victory. But if he doesn't, because it's hard to train for a guy that's so awkward like Ponce, at the same time awkward that has some punching power. And sometimes when you're trying to train for a certain style that you can't find outside of the gym, you know, your sparring partners, they're going to be, you know, mirroring something else that's not even close to Ponce de Leon. Your game plan could end up being stuck to that game plan that the sparring partner gave you, not necessarily the game plan to defeat a Ponce de Leon.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. You know, I think his biggest problem in this fight is his chin. And I think the southpaw style, particularly the way that Ponce fights, is not going to be a big problem. I think with Johnny, it's just, will he tire late? Does he have to expend too much energy executing a movement-based game plan? And then later in the fight, is he going to have to exchange? And that's where he's going to have his big problem. We'll see. You know, I expect him to overcome all of those things and to beat Ponce. But we'll see. You know, I mean, he's got game-changing power. I really, a lot of people call me it.
He does, but I think Johnny does too as well. I mean, he can crack. So this is going to be fun. It's going to be one of those fights where there's a strong possibility that in that third or maybe even fourth, fifth round, all boxing skills can be thrown out of the ring. These guys may go at it.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't see that. I mean, they could. There's that $100,000 bonus that De La Hoya has put out there for the guy that gets the best knockout. I just think an action fight is not in Johnny Gonzalez's best interest.
And I think that the Beristain's going to make him understand that, and then that's how the fight's going to go.
And I'm also just looking at the way boxing generally works. Whenever you have a card that's stacked, it must, you know, the can't miss knockouts, generally that doesn't happen.
Right.
So if I have to pick one fight that's not going to be a knockout on that card, it would be this one. But that's just me. You want me to get into the fight schedule a little bit? I mean, Friday is, I guess, grim. I guess would be the best way to describe it. But Saturday we've got, Thomas Delorme, you know, is fighting in Puerto Rico, in Carolina, Puerto Rico, against Yvonne Hernandez. It's 15-0 versus 29-3 at the Coliseo Angulo, no relation to Alfredo. Fernando Torres, 17-3-1 versus Samuel Santana, 6-6-2. And Jose Pedraza, tomato, tomato, 9-0 versus Jose Valderrama, 2-1. Let me head over to Saturday. There's all kinds of stuff going on. September 1st at the Koenig Pilsener Arena in Oberhausen, Germany. Felix Sturm, 37-2-2 versus Daniel Giel, or Giel, you choose, 27-1 for the IBF and WBA middleweight belts. I've kind of already talked a little bit about this before. I like Sturm to win in a decision, but I think Giel is going to, you know, as the pattern has been, come on late and kind of put it to Sturm a little bit. Will Giel's face hold up with those big 1-2s down the middle? We'll see. And Sturm, he certainly, you know, beat up Sebastian Zivic. It's very possible that he could do the same thing to Daniel Giel, but I just don't think that's going to happen. I like Sturm by decision.
I think so, too. I like Sturm by decision. Starting out late at somebody else's backyard, you know, we've seen what happens. It's right now everything to me is just leaning towards Sturm, so I'm going to go with that, too.
Yeah, it's really hard to bet against him. You know, and then also in support there, Ruslan Chagayev versus the dreaded TBA, 29-2-1. And then moving over to stateside at the Turning Stone Casino in Verona, New York, on HBO's Boxing After Dark,
Gennady Golovkin, 23-0 versus Gregor Sproxa, 28-1. You know, looking at the pictures, looking at them side by side, Golovkin is the bigger guy. He's got power on either side. I was talking with Abel Sanchez, his trainer, last week, and Abel visibly lights up when he starts talking about Golovkin. He just, power like this is rare. Work ethic like this is rare. And chemistry, which is clear between the two of them, is rare. I think Golovkin is a special guy. I think he's kind of like a smooth-moving tank. It's nothing flashy,
right,
but, man, when he gets there, you know, he just lands on you, and it's bone-rattling power. I think he kind of cages.
When you say it's nothing flashy, but once you start watching him, your eyes are fixed on it. They don't move.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They just stay there. That's the flashiness of him. You know what I mean?
He's mesmerizing. Yeah, you got to watch him. Yeah.
Right. It's not the entrance that he does. It's the performance what catches you when he's in the room.
Yeah, that pressure that he's always putting on, his ability to deal with different styles. I think this would be a tough fight just because Proxa can move, and I think he can punch a little bit, although I think Golovkin's power is more like next level. I think it's for real, whereas I think Proxa was blowing out guys early, and now it's kind of leveled off. We'll see. You know, I don't know if that Kerry Hope fight kind of showed the best and worst of him, and that's all he's got. I don't know. Maybe he's learned from that. But throwing him in with a guy like Golovkin, either his handlers really believe that he's next level and he's going to take this belt, or they believe, like, let's just cash him out now. And maybe if he wins, it'll be good. You know?
I agree. You know, and I know the whole Dmitry Pirov fight, when it was first announced, I got to tell you, I wasn't really that disappointed when the injury came about, and it was kicked off on the card. It didn't happen because I was like, this is just too early for Christmas. I like the fact that people are going to get a shot to watch him on HBO, so they can kind of see the special that we see, and that Pirov fight to me would be a little bit more talked about and more interesting outside of just usual boxing hits.
Yeah, I mean, I really wanted to see the Pirog fight. I was really upset that didn't happen, just because I championed Dmitry this whole time. And knowing them, knowing his people, it was a big blow to them that he wasn't able to do it. I mean, I don't think they went about it completely the right way. I thought towards the end I was frustrated. I was like, guys, just fight somewhere in America, you know.
Right.
Just start getting yourself there and earn that HBO spot. It's a bummer, but at the same time, hopefully Pirov gets another chance. He's still got a belt. He can still come back around and get their interest. I know I kind of got the sense that this is the only interest that HBO was going to have in him, if it was like a 2-for-1 deal, you know. I believe that this is originally supposed to be a completely different fight. I don't know. We'll see, with Pirov. I'm just hoping that back injury isn't something that just kind of kills his career. I mean, he's 32 years old. It's going to be tough. And once you get something like that, you could just be screwed. But back to this fight, I just think that Proxa will move. I don't think he's going to be as strong as Golovkin. I think he's just going to get worn down, and it's going to be a slow beating up until about 8, and then it's going to get really nasty. And then somewhere around 10 or 11, it's going to be over. That's just how I see it.
There you go.
Moving forward to the support fight, which is this is another kind of interesting fight. Sergey Zinzirek, 37-1, versus Jonathan Gonzalez, 15-0. Gonzalez is a prospect. He's a young
right.
guy. And you kind of look at it and you say, well, how is a guy like Sergey Zinzirek, why is he fighting this guy? It's a good question. I mean, I think Gonzalez, people obviously feel that he's ready to step up. It's as good a chance as any getting Zinzirek off the long layoff and that blowout performance against Sergio Martinez last year, where he's dropped like 5 times.
Right.
But at the same time, like, you just went the distance with Billy Lyle. You know, that's a guy that the special ones stop. He looked good against Ruiz Cisneros, and I wasn't overly impressed with the Richard Gutierrez fight. So it's interesting to me that it's such a big step up in class.
talking to the guys out here, that Justin Fortune, who's working with Jim Zurich, when he first came into camp, he was kind of putting things still together. I think maybe it was jet lag. It was kind of adjusting from training overseas and then coming here to train at Fortune Gym. But they were guys around the gym were saying he was looking sharper and sharper. But what I'm gathering, and this is just watching tape, the inside game is going to be the big thing. If Gonzalez can take it inside and make it a rough and tumble fight, Zinzurek, I think, is going to be in trouble yet again. It's a really tough fight. I'm not really sure who to pick. I'm going to go with the young guy. I'm going to go with Jonathan Gonzalez.
I'm really leaning with Jonathan Gonzalez, too. You know, it is a tough fight. You know, experience can also be the big factor in it. But at the same time, you got a hungry kid. It's a big jump. Let's see if he's going to be able to, you know, make that leap. We'll find out.
I mean, I just think it's a weird fight. You know, it's one of those, it's again, kind of a two-for-one. You know, in a lot of ways, it's what boxing after dark was all about.
Absolutely.
Only, you know, normally, like, Zinzurek would be a younger guy heading towards, you know, more like a showbox kind of a thing. But this is a crossroads fight. If Zinzurek wants to be back on HBO, and this is kind of part of the deal the first time he was on HBO with Sergio Martinez, they gave him this guaranteed date. If he wants to earn another shot back, he's got to win a fight like this. For Gonzalez, if he wants to get to that next level and start talking about title shots, it's a little early. He's only 15-0. Then he's got to get past this guy. Should be an interesting fight. I think there'll be some desperate moments, particularly late with everything on the table. I think it feels like a distance fight to me, which should be fun down the stretch. At the Sumiyoshi Sports Center in Osaka, Japan, Tsepareth Kokijin, 20-2 versus Nobu Noshiro, 18-4-1 for the WBA junior bantamweight belt. In Guasavo, Mexico, Doki Sinanti Joyi, 22-0 versus Mario Rodriguez, 14-6-4 for the IBF straw white belt. And at the Arena Roberto Duran in Panama City, Panama, Maruthi Mathalane, Mathalane, 28-2 versus Ricardo Nunez, 24-2 for the IBF flyweight belt. And that is your weekend fight schedule. Good Lord. A lot of fights happening all over the place, so boxing is definitely warming back up. Certainly not as warm as the room I'm in, but I think it's going to be, you know, it's kicking off with this September 1st and then heading into the 8th and then the 15th. We're going to forget all about August and how brutal this month has been, man. It's just been like I've had to rewatch Hagler Hearns and bust out some old Trinidad fights and Leonard Duran just to kind of cleanse myself from, like, how little action we've had.
I know, definitely, you know. I've had to go back through all the DVR recorded fights that I've had, you know, just to get that fix in, you know, to keep me from my insanity, just keep it there, especially with all these hours that I've been putting in at work and all the craziness outside of work that we've been dealing with here on Leaving the Ring, the merge with Billy C, that should be I'm not on Twitter. That should be something else. We're still working on the press release on that so we can kind of explain exactly what we're doing with the Billy C family. So look out for that there. And look out for us on September 8th, you know, they're Riverside, California.
Oh, I keep forgetting. That's right. You should have reminded me. John, he can't. He's not going there. We're going to be at the gym.
I have to do that. You know what? I did that all Saturday night for you, you know?
All Saturday night. I know. I really wanted to be there.
Yeah.
He's going to be at the gym. Oh, that's right. I don't know. It's some sort of guilt. I mean, I felt like I should be there at that fight, you know? It's just right there. It's on our coast. I don't think the fight's getting as much love as it should. I think it's going to be a good fight. I know, there are people that are just like, Ward boring, Dawson's boring. I don't know. Maybe they are. You know, maybe they're not, you know, Leonard and Hearn, certainly not. But
no.
I think together they're going to have good chemistry. I really do. I don't think Chad wants to lose again. I think he wants to dispel all those things. And the talks that him and Scully are having with each other, I find that very interesting because you can visibly see a different attitude in Chad Dawson. Andre Ward has definitely got a chip on his shoulder. You can just see it. He wants to be, he's a gold medalist. He wants to be that De La Hoya or that, you know, not exactly like them, but he wants to be that superstar guy. He wants to be that Floyd Mayweather guy. And he's not getting the love that, that he feels he deserves. In order to get it, to me, both guys are going to have to go out there and do something special. Somebody's going to have to knock somebody out, or they're going to have to really go through hell trying. That's, for me, I think that's what both guys need to do. They just they need to capture our imagination. They need to capture our attention. And while they've done that winning over the years and being consistent, Chad has been up and down in recent years. They haven't done it an electrifying, you know, powerful way of stopping another guy or risking and going through hell to get there. I know some people just don't want to do that because it's a safety thing, and you know, I'd rather, you know, I have a family to feed or I have a family to worry about after boxing. But if you want the pure, unadulterated love of boxing fans, you have to remember that their first love is blood. Their second love is you, because there's always going to be another you around the corner. So you got to give them that blood and guts type of fight. You just do.
You absolutely. You know, and I like the, I love the fact you were talking about how they have to do something to capture the fans. You know, I mean, when you think of Tito Trinidad, and I know this is kind of the worst is to try to compare a fighter to Tito Trinidad, but when he left the 147 division and went in at 150, fighting the All-American Dream, Dave Reed, he left you with going, oh, my God, we need to watch more. We need to see more. You know, that's the kind of fight that people want to see. They want to see. To me, a lot of fighters are really starting to fall into that cloud of Floyd Mayweather speak. You know, rolling the shoulder, be more prettier than a fighter. You know, it's good to have one fighter occasionally like that. But if you want to be up on that top, you want to get to capture the imagination of fighters, you got to do that extra something. You got to do that extra daring moment in your career. And that's something that Ward and Dawson are missing. They're missing that extra daring moment in their career, big time.
Yeah, that's the thing. Remember when Tito retired, and that was really the thought for me was no more Tito fights. Like that's, you know, there are very few fighters today that Kirkland is kind of one that comes to mind. That when
that makes
things kind of, that makes me kind of go.
Yeah.
It's sad. If you're not going to get more fights, like hell, man, that's the thing. You always want to see them. I don't care if Kirkland, you know, fires everybody, gets more trainers, and you know is promoted by whoever. I want to see his next fight. And Valero was a guy like that too. Valero's fighting, got to see it. You know, there are not many guys these days. Not even Manny Pacquiao does that for me anymore. I remember when he beat Barrera, I'd seen him before, and I was like, whoa, I want to see this guy fight. You know, it's a guy that I need to see fight again. It's very exciting.
Absolutely.
He's vulnerable. He doesn't do that for me anymore. Floyd doesn't really do that for me either, you know.
Right.
Although Floyd Cotto did capture my attention as a fight. You know, I didn't go for my reasons, but as a fight, watching it now, I'm like, wow, you know, I couldn't have been more off base. Cotto was really put forth an effort. But there isn't that
Absolutely.
Guy. And I think a guy could emerge on some level from this fight. You know, I mean, can you imagine if Chad Dawson knocked out Andre Ward or vice versa, but did it like in 6-7 rounds, the kind of fight that it would have to be for that to happen. It would be a pretty special fight because they're very high caliber guys. Whatever you think of their styles or their personalities, they're high level fighters. That's
exactly
kind of what we need. You know, I don't think that's going to happen, but I think it's going to be more exciting than we think.
That's what we need to be fed. Obviously, that's exactly what we need to be fed. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. 3 hours of boxing talk here on Leaving the Ring with myself, Dave Duenas, and my co-host, Gable Montoya, the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chin. Let's patch in some fight fans, man. I want to talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring. Let's patch in, let's see. Let's get John, who wants to talk Martinez, Mr. Chavez, and more. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Doing great, brother.
So I had a question. I saw some of the recent pictures of Martinez working out for the Chavez fight, and I thought he had a knee brace on in a few of them. I was just wondering, is he struggling with the same thing he had in the Barker fight? Is this like a lingering injury, or is it just a precautionary measure? Because I figure if his mobility is compromised at all, that can really affect his chances in that fight.
They use this thing. I'm not even sure if it's a full brace. I haven't seen the pictures, what you're referring to. But they put tape in various parts of his body, like just below the knee and like over the shoulder. Some of it, they were explaining that it was like a circulation thing and also kind of a bit of a brace. But it's nothing to be really like concerned with. I think they're very aware of his body and the wear and tear that it's taken over the years. But as far as I know, he's at a very, very healthy camp. That's what I've been told. And that he feels, I even asked him heading into camp how he felt, and he said, you know, he felt 100% heading into camp. He'd got a really good rest between fights and was ready to go. So, I mean, I don't know, the last couple of times it's come out like, oh, he's got this or he's got this little thing. But this time I'm not hearing anything. So I don't think it's anything to be worried about.
Cool. And then my other question was regarding this Peter Quillen fight coming up. I saw today that it's for the full WBO belt, and I must have missed the part where they stripped Pirog, because I knew they didn't want him fighting Golovkin or doing that unification, but I never heard any justification that or anything about them stripping him after that fight was canceled. And, like, he's not even ranked now, so is he just, like, done with the WBO altogether?
That's a good question. You know, it's all a little murky. I know, Peter Quillen is fighting, and this guy's name is going to be a pain in my ass for the next few months.
Right.
he's got the interim WBO belt. Hassan Endem and Jack Ham. I'll soon get that rhythm, and we'll be putting a beat to it. I believe he has the interim WBO middleweight belt, but at the same time, you know, I'm not sure. I know he's putting that on the line. I don't know if Pirog's been fully stripped at this point. If he's relinquished the belt, if they're looking at his more freedom, did not have the belt. I'm not quite sure. The belt, you know, I got to be honest. A lot of times. I try not to just pay attention to them because they just kind of move around at will. And if you want to delve deeper and really find out, nobody's ever really going to answer those questions. Like, you know, how did Danny Jacobs move into position? You know, Sergio right. Martinez getting stripped so fast after winning the middleweight, the WBO belt. He gets stripped and boom, Danny Jacobs and Pirog are fighting for it because of the next two guys. Like, why did that really happen? Nobody really answers that question, and they're never going to. So, I don't know.
Well, they had an answer before. They had an answer before. Remember with Timothy Bradley? You remember with Timothy Bradley because he was an actor. What was the term that they gave it? The name of that it was called. I think it was called inactive champion or something like that.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Yeah,
emeritus or one of those.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, it was pretty funny. Just even listening to Bob Arum when he was talking at the Nishi press conference this week, and he's laying out the belts, you know, the IBF and the WBO, and then he's like, wait a minute, is it, you know, it was the vacant silver belt for super bantamweights by the WBC, and then later on he comes back up to the podium and goes, I have to excuse myself, it's not the silver, it's the diamond, which is better. And he even kind of just laughed, like, how ridiculous this whole thing is. Like, I don't think Nishio is putting on his actual WBC belt on the line. So I tend to, just because I know other people kind of follow that stuff, for me, I just follow the fight because, you know, that's really all the information I need. You know, we'll look at the styles and where they're at and all the things that go with a fight. But belts, they don't really matter anymore.
I tend to follow the DeWalt belt much more in the Ring Card Girls.
Yes.
But that's
good. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you guys as far as not paying attention. This just kind of annoyed me, I guess, a bit more in this particular case. Because NJCAM, you know, turned down how many fights with Golovkin, and I don't think ever made like a good faith effort to negotiate with Pirog or even make that fight at all. And then, you know, Quillen is calling out, acts like he's the most ducked person in boxing, and it's like turning down fights with Martinez and people like that. So just the idea of them, either of them getting a full belt in this fight, I don't know, that just kind of raised my ire a little more.
Well, he's not going to, I always knew Quillen, because as soon as he went with Heyman, that he would get a belt, and then he would kind of go to the weakest link. I mean, he's in a division that if he ain't careful, and I think it's going to be a situation where this is going to be not a belt but a shield, you know, sort of like with Canelo.
Mm-hmm.
If he can get a hold of this belt and then the WBO's just full-on strips Pirog and they don't, you know, and then he becomes the regular, you know, or actual WBO middleweight champion, and he can kind of hide behind that, and they can just filter whatever kind of mandatories or mismandatories they want to Quillen. They'll fight him in New York at the Barclays Center. You're kind of seeing the Danny Jacobs plan effect is what they hoped to have when they originally had Danny fix that WBO belt, a New York champion fighting in New York at a bigger, you know, event center. And that's what they're going to hope to get out of Quillen. It's smart, you know. I don't know if, you know, he's got a big fan base in New York and people are big on him there. But, and you know, with NGCAM, I mean, it's kind of weird, like he was like fishing, you know, he got the interim WBA belt and then drops that after a couple of fights and goes after the interim WBO belt. Everybody's
right.
Kind of looking for that path of least resistance, you know, but it's going to be interesting. I mean, Golovkin is going to be a problem for a lot of people. Will Chavez Jr., I don't think he'll fare very well at 168, so he's kind of have to defend the belt. If he beats Martinez, he'll go with the mismandatory route. If Martinez wins, he's going to be looking for the big names and probably settle on a mandatory for the WBC. The middleweights are like hot, but at the same time, they're kind of cold. I don't see a lot of guys fighting each other anytime soon, even though we're getting a little bit of unification action in the coming weeks. I think that'll be as hot as it gets for a while. So, I don't know. Quillen, he better hope he gets better while he has that belt. But he's going to be one of those champions, a champion that's still developing, quote-unquote, while he's got a belt. It is kind of
right.
Important. You know, these guys don't do it
yeah,
correctly. You know, he's still – I think this is the first guy in a long time that Quillen is fighting that's actually, undefeated for one and not coming off a loss. It's been a while.
That's true.
Well,
that's
I don't want to get you in trouble. I don't want him to have another Twitter tantrum.
I don't think Quillen pays any attention to what I have to say anymore. I certainly the feeling is mutual. So that's all. I hope he gets his belt. I hope he lives his dream. You know, I'm not crapping on him. I'm it's good for him that he's finally fighting somebody that's worth something. Style wise, I wonder about the fight. I think I need to probably check out Ndamukong a few more times. I'm getting better at saying the name. We're
yep, there you go.
Away from having Sergio Martinez on.
There you go. John, thanks for calling in, brother. I'm going to put you back on hold.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys. Have a good show.
Thank you.
Thank you. 3 hours of boxing talk here on Leaving the Ring. Your host, Dave Duenas, and my co-host, Gabriel Montoya. Man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. Questions that have been asked for Leaving the Ring on Gmail. On our gmail.com. Sergio Martinez, if he wins against Chavez Jr., and I know you've been mentioned right now, Gabe, was going to be looking for the bigger fights. Bigger fights, meaning could he possibly go after the winner of Dawson and Ward? Is that financially the best idea for him? I think financially it is. I don't think him going down in weight looking for the smaller guys is ever going to happen. I think he's going to have to be forced a bit here, Gabriel, in my opinion, to move up in weight.
You think so? I don't know.
I think so. I don't see a Martinez Mayweather happening. I don't see a Pacquiao happening. I don't see him getting these big name fights. I mean, what big name fights are out there for him? I mean, you know, except for, I don't see a Canelo fight happening. obviously. I think he's going to have to start treading up in the deeper waters. I think he's going to have to leave the 160 zone and move up.
You know, I'm sorry. I made the cardinal mistake. I looked at Twitter. Oscar De La Hoya just tweeted, thank you to all the media who does an honest, professional, and accurate reporting. Barclays Center, Golden Boy Boxing. Thanks, October 20th. You're welcome, Oscar. Just putting that out there. Your heartfelt. You're welcome.
Yeah,
I don't think Sergio needs to move up. You know, I think there's still 154 is a hot.
I lost you. What did you say? Gabe, did we lose you? I didn't hear anything you said right now. Well, we lost Gabriel Montoya. I don't know what happened. He dropped off. But he'll be calling me back in a short bit, hopefully.
What's that?
Oh, there you are. Now I can hear you. You just kind of fell off.
I think it's your phone. I'm blaming you. My bars have not changed, Dave. I have an iPhone, goddammit.
I got full bars over here. Anyway, so go back to what you were saying here about Sergio Martinez not thinking that he has to move up, that he could stay at 160. But he's staying at 160. What fight out there at 160 could he really make banking a lot of money, except for maybe a rematch with Chavez if the first fight is that good?
Well, for him to win, the first fight's going to have to be that good. So the rematch is definitely a huge fight, depending also how the pay-per-view numbers do. But I think it's going to be – I think it'll do respectable numbers. I think it'll be like 550,000, somewhere in there. I don't expect it to do Pacquiao or Mayweather numbers by any stretch of the imagination. I'd be shocked if it did 800 to 900, absolutely shocked. But there's that fight. There's Golovkin. I don't think it's a huge fight. I wonder what HBO would pay for it. This is the problem, is now Sergio's graduating to pay-per-view status. So once you get a taste of that and the kind of money that you're getting doing that and the treatment that you get in terms of the media and the marketing that HBO puts behind it, it's really hard to put the genie back in the bottle. So
right.
He's going to want that. I mean, maybe now if he goes down to 154, maybe now Cotto is interested because it has built a little something with a pay-per-view. And making him come down to 154 after all this time, that's going to, you know, further weaken Sergio. That fight becomes a possibility. That's at least if he's talking about pay-per-views. Certainly not going to rule out Shane Mosley or Winky Wright. Those guys are both retired, although Wright would probably come out of retirement to do a pay-per-view. I don't know. You know, I mean, I think from 154 to 160, Sergio can still play around and creatively matchmake. Go back to regular HBO, at least make 1.5 or somewhere in there to get a couple fights. His biggest mistake will be beating Chavez and waiting around for Mayweather. I would almost take the immediate rematch, make a bunch more money, and then wait for Mayweather or try to get Mayweather. But I don't know. It'll be interesting. I don't see him moving up to 168 because I don't think those guys give him the kind of money that he's going to want either, and it's a greater risk. It's like his fourth weight division. You know, I don't know.
Good point.
We'll see.
Yeah, good point. No, definitely. That's a good point there.
But, I mean, who knows? I mean, this fight could take the last of him. You know, he's leaving a little.
That's a very strong. Yeah, it's a big, big possibility. I mean, he is facing, you know, Chavez is a big kid, and he can take a good punch. I don't know how good of a punch can he take. I mean, Sergio Martinez has that speed. He's got that speed factor, you know, and he's got that angle where and that power that just carries over from the first to the 12th round. To me, getting hit over and over and over, that's something that Chavez is going to have to overcome. That's something that Chavez is going to have to figure out. Can he figure that out? And trying to figure it out in the ring while the guy's throwing that punch at you, man, that's just a tough, tough way of learning how to move your head.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know. Today I was talking to somebody and I saw some stuff that made me feel kind of swayed me back towards the middle. I'd been leaning towards Chavez Jr. this whole time. And I've now kind of leaned back to neutral. I'm not quite sure where I'm going to go with my pick. I mean, it's just such a tough fight. You know, you've got on one hand this behemoth, you know, kid with a great chin who's just going to come forward and not take no for an answer all night long. He's going to – you should have seen him at the press conference where he started talking about Martinez's proclivity for wearing a high guard around his middle, you know, sort of like De La Hoya did. And he was saying how he's got to be hiding something. He must absolutely hate getting hit to the body. And he just kind of smiled about it. Like I was saying, he understands who he is in this fight. He's a bad guy. And he kind of takes pleasure in that. And I think he's going to take a lot of pleasure in taking Martinez's shots and showing them that they have no effect whatsoever, and watching Martinez break mentally if that scenario plays out. I think that's what he wants. That's what he envisions, is Martinez.
You know what I'm really curious about is how well Martinez does against the hook to the liver. Chavez Jr. to me has been kind of catching it a lot more, you know, figuring it out and being comfortable with it. We've seen him kind of throw it a little more fluently and freely, you know, when he does get in close. And the last fight, we talked about this, how there were some moments he mirrored his dad. He looked like his dad. His head movement going in, you know, throwing a hook to the body, coming back with a hook to the head. I mean, there's some things there. I don't know, though, if he's going to be successful that much, but I have a feeling he is going to be successful in landing those shots because of his size, the size and him coming forward. You know, Martinez has been great in stopping his opponents in the 11th round. You know, he's been great in breaking his opponents down. But at the same time, he has been touched in the process of landing his punches.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the thing is, you got to stay still for those to land. You know, he's really, his feet are like very slow, Chavez Jr. So I'm curious to see. It's going to be a balancing act of moving enough and getting off enough and not staying there for those long exchanges where Junior can just wail on you. Martinez isn't the guy that just sits on the ropes and lets you do that. That's not his game. He turns you all night long and keeps you moving. Will he be able to do that? Or will that pressure make him wilt later on, you know, and he gets caught along the ropes the way he did with Margarito and stopped? We'll see. You know, is that ref going to jump the gun? Everything to me, the reason I've always picked and leaned towards Chavez Jr. is that everything leans towards him. Everything, you know, it's a top-ranked promotion. Martinez is 37 years old. He's got 60 fights on him. You know, he's been stopped before by a similar style. Granted, it was years ago, but the template still works. Put a lot of pressure, throw a lot of punches, dig at his body, just be a Mexican brawler with an iron chin who doesn't stop, and this guy will go away because his speed style just doesn't hold up. And you've seen it in the last couple of fights with Barker and with Macklin. Martinez is taking more and more punishment, a broken nose here, a knee that hurts there, or an ankle or an elbow. He's slowly breaking down. Will Chavez put that finishing touch on him? We'll see. You know, it's going to be
physically
fight.
Outside, that shell looks fantastic. He, you know, he looks like a young man. But looking like a young man and feeling like a young man are two different things. And that's you're right about that. It's going to be definitely interesting to see how young he is inside against a big bull like Julio Cesar Chavez. And we apologize to the people that are on hold. David Chen, he'll catch up to speed right now and check and see who's on hold here on Leaving the Ring so that we can patch some fight fans here on Leaving the Ring so we can talk some boxing before we have Sergio Martinez back on Leaving the Ring to talk about his upcoming fight with Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. Find out a little bit of his concerns in facing the big Mexican kid, the son of a legend.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I'm, you know, kind of going over the different media, too, looking, trying to find those questions that no one asks. Because I think we've kind of gone over the same territory with Martinez. That was one thing that I noticed about that face-off. The Junior came out more compelling because he's starting to really understand himself.
Right.
And he's like being the bad guy, but he had solid answers for everything that Martinez said, you know, of, you know, Martinez complaining, ah, you're just the son of a legend, or, you know, that's the only reason you got here. And Junior's like, yeah, and I always will be, you know, he just seems to know how to handle it. I'm curious, you know, where Martinez feels that he is at in the mental game aspect. Does he feel like he's gotten under the kid's skin? Or is it just two guys like pissed at each other and it's just rising and rising and rising and it's not going to build, you know, it's not going to go anywhere until somebody gets hit. It's a more compelling fight than I ever thought it would be, but I can't wait, dude. I really can't wait.
I got to say, yeah. I mean, you know, a year back, we were like, this will be an easy fight for Sergio Martinez. Now we're at a stage where this is not going to be an easy fight for Sergio Martinez. The shuffle of cards are definitely there, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, too, even, like, the pictures you see of Chavez Jr. training, and like, his feet are side by side. Like, he's just totally squared up. I mean, I don't know. We're going to find out how good his chin is. I mean, the thing is, you know, Barker and Macklin, they are – well, Macklin, I think, fought at 154, but he was a real middleweight. Barker was a real middleweight. Martinez was able to knock them out. Paul Williams was gigantic, but I don't know if he was ever, you know, had a win at middleweight.
Right.
That he could say, like, you know, I'm a true middleweight. Certainly he could carry the weight. He got knocked the hell out. And then Kelly Pavlik. Now, you know, it's all revisionist history now. Oh, well, Kelly was really far gone in the liquor and the whole bit. You would have thought that he was bleeding Jack Daniels, you know, the way some people talk. But that fight was a struggle, and Martinez was able to prevail. I mean, his fights have, if you look back at his career, I've watched a lot of his fights. He's been knocked down, gotten up to win before. You know, he's been through adversity. He's been through just about everything you could think of in fights, all the way to being stopped. So really the question is can he handle the size of this kid? Can he keep moving for 12 rounds? Will his power have an effect? Will it be like Chinese water torture, and eventually it has an effect? You know, what mental effect will it have if Martinez lands and nothing happens? You know, these are the things.
Mentally, I think that was one of his biggest flaws in the beginning, you know, when even when he fought Antonio Margarito so early in his career, Margarito's style was overwhelming for him. When he fought Cintron, you saw some of the half where he does kind of fall apart when you apply a lot of pressure. It's ever since he's became a champion, you know, he's now fought more like a champion. You know what I mean? It's the change of mind frame. I don't know. Chavez, to me, has to remind him that when pressure is applied, that he did fold. He does have problems with that. But it's going to be a tough intervention for Chavez to do to Martinez by reminding him about that. He's going to be going through fire, man. But that's the only way I could see Chavez beating him or getting to that point. I mean, he's a big kid. He's got the size. But he's got to have that chin.
I remember watching the Zubik fight at ringside and thinking the whole time, because, you know, Zubik was moving back and then turning and landing some really solid shots early on. Steve and I was looking at each other like, wow, this guy is really teeing off. And I kept thinking, what if this guy had Martinez's power, you know, his ability to really just light you up from an angle you don't see coming and it's not only that, it's like he puts everything into it, you know, those shots. And I wonder how Chavez would hold up. And, you know, we're about to find out. Did he really truly inherit that chin? Was Andy Lee scared out of his mind in that fight? You know, did he have similar issues with somebody vandalizing him? It sounds like Samson Lekowitz is really kind of downplaying it. I'm really curious to see.
I don't think Chavez, honestly. I was joking about it earlier, but I don't know. I don't think Chavez Jr. had anything to do with it. I think it just has to do with fanatics, you know, fan fanatics that want to see the kid prevail.
Well,
not the first time. It's not the first time where, I mean, Costa-Zuka attested that, you know, being threatened because he was going to fight an icon like Julio Cesar Chavez Sr., you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's just one of those, you know. It's one of those, like, We know that the kid is spoiled, but
I just look at it this way: like, they wouldn't have an armed guard around him if they just thought it was just some random dude,
right?
And they wouldn't have canceled media day. You know, to me, like,
well,
the statement of this is some guy, and then what's that?
I said obviously it is a serious issue, but I don't necessarily think, unless with proof, that Chavez people or camp have anything to do or involved with it. We're about a minute away of having Sergio Martinez here with us on Leaving the Ring with myself, Dave Dornis, and Gabriel Montoya. You want to call in 347-205-98. Be sure to tune in right now. Gabriel Montoya is going to be patching them through so we can speak to Martinez.
And, I'll be calling him in right now. I'll be right back.
There we go. 3 hours of boxing talk here on Leaving the Ring. Be sure to tune in every Thursday night, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. Don't forget to listen to The Boxing Fix Sunday night, same times as ours, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. And Noche de Boxeo for the Spanish-speaking fans out there. Noche de Boxeo every Monday night. Same time, 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern. So be sure to tune in, listen to all three radio shows that are all passed through. Family, the familia of Leaving in the Ring. We're going to be joining another familia, the Billy C, talking boxing over there. So we're building an army, man. We're building an army here on Leaving the Ring. So let's see if I have my co-host back with me. Gabriel, are you there with me, brother? Not yet. Not yet here with me. You know, get a lot of these answers, a lot of these questions answered that we have in ourselves to find out what's going on in the mind of Sergio Martinez going into one of the biggest fights of his career, a fight that he's been asking for quite some time, a fight really we all thought that would have been a mismatch at one time. Now we're all divided. This is a tough fight. It's a good fight. This is a big fight. This is a fight that he was asking for and possibly may get what he's asking for and get a bit more. Going in with the son of a legend, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., September 15th in Las Vegas. How many folks are going to be flying out there? You know, I was going to head out there. I put out credentials for it, but then I forgot. Can you leave that? I forgot. It's my son's birthday. I can't go anywhere. I'm going to have a party over here, so I'll be watching it. In the telly. Here in my own house. Air conditioning, barbecuing, relaxing, the whole shebang. I'll be out there in Las Vegas, but I will be out there soon. And we're going to be in Riverside, California, with Henry Ramirez and Josecito Lopez, who is fighting on the same night. He's fighting against his dragon, Canelo Alvarez. Big fight for him. Big fight for him. Not just a big fight. He's fighting a big man. Sergio Martinez, same thing. Big night for him, but fighting a big fight with a big guy. So both guys are almost in the same position, fighting some big dudes. Josecito Lopez is fighting a guy that's a natural 154, comes in at a 160, where Josecito has to gain weight. Sergio Martinez he said numerous times, even in his training camp, he's not a natural 160, he's a natural 154, but he's fighting a guy that walks in as a light heavyweight. So both guys have some obstacles. They're going to be fighting the Goliaths. They're going to be the Davids facing the Goliaths on September 15th, Las Vegas. Gabriel, you there? I'm running out of stuff to talk about here, buddy. Fight fans, call in 347-215-7598. Here on Leaving the Ring, we're waiting for Sergio Martinez to click over and speak to us here on Leaving the Ring. We'll talk some boxing. Again, we'll be out September 8th. Don't forget, Ustream. We're going to be Ustreaming it, as well as Blog Talk, on a Saturday, which would be the same day as Chad Dawson, who we had John Scully, the Iceman, the head trainer for Chad Dawson, here on Leaving the Ring a little earlier. Same date with Chad Dawson facing Andre Ward, the son of God, Oakland's favorite son, one of the Bay Area teams. Fortunately, we're not going to be out there. We're going to be in Riverside with Henry Ramirez and Indian Willie and all the fighters that go out there and train, and we're going to have a chance to sit there with all the fighters that go out there and train. We're going to have a chance to watch them spar, and we're going to Ustream it. We're going to have a chance to sit down and speak to Henry Ramirez and Josecito Lopez. Find out what's in the mind frame. You know, how well is he moving up weight? Is he gaining muscle? Is it gaining more fat than muscle? Getting closer. It's crunching. It's crunching closer to the date. You can hear my co-host back with me. Gabriel, are you there?
I am. We have to call him back in 5 minutes. He's taping with HBO. So.
Okay, well, 5 minutes, we'll call him back. He's with HBO. He said, big fight for Sergio Martinez, September 15th, with the son of a legend, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. And I was just pointing this out, Gabriel, that both guys, Josecito Lopez and Sergio Martinez, are fighting Goliaths. They're both fighting bigger guys.
Yeah,
you know?
They're fighting, you know, bigger guys and the icons or the future icons of the sport. They're fighting all kinds of stuff. They're not just fighting two people. And that's going to be the tough thing for both of them.
Fighting the crowd?
Yeah, fighting the crowd,
you
fighting the judges, fighting history, fighting a promotion. You know, I mean, all week long, you know, those judges are there. They see who's the bigger head on the poster. They know who's taking care of them, you know, who's the lead guy in the promotion. It's just the way it is, you know. Both those guys need really dominant performances. I think Martinez needs a knockout to win, to be perfectly honest. You know, I just don't see how they let him out of there with the belt. And the other way.
You know what? I can't see the knockout, to tell you the truth, but I could see the beatdown. You know, as much as we've heard the rumors, or not even the rumors, but that we know that, you know, he's a lazy kid, doesn't want to do this, he's kind of rode the name of his father. I can't picture this kid quitting. I think he's going to give it his all. I think, if anything, I think he's going to take a beating. You know, I don't think it has anything to do where he's going for it because he doesn't want to let his fans down. But I think it has some sense of pride to the legacy of his father, where he doesn't want to have a letdown to his dad. His dad's going to be there ringside watching, yelling out to him instructions as he's done in prior fights. So there's a lot of stake for Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. As calm as I'm hearing that he is, there's a lot of nerves there. There's a lot on that kid's back, and not just with the legacy thing, but he's got a prime, fast, strong, established middleweight champion right now that he's going to be facing. So both men are walking in the ring with demons. Josecito Lopez, different story, different scenario. Jumping up in weight twice. He was successful against Victor Ortiz, but we saw what he had to go through against Victor Ortiz. This guy was going through iron. His face looked like he got in a car wreck. Now he's going in with another type of breed of fighter, a guy that throws more fluid combinations, who in my book is a much better boxer than Victor Ortiz. And I would say,
I would agree with that.
You know?
Yeah. What I like about Canelo, and I don't think he is, you know, they always talk about his power. I think he's got strength, you know, and when his technique is very crisp and it's fluid. He does put everything he's got into those shots. And people forget him. And I've watched that fight, the Lopez and Josecito. I've watched it a couple times recently. And it was a much more competitive fight than people realize. I think that Lopez was in control at more times than people realize. But his face, it was a race against, you know, if Ortiz doesn't quit or doesn't have a broken jaw, I'm not sure if Josecito Lopez's face makes it to the end of the fight. You know, he was taking a pounding in that fight. Now he's going to be taking on, like you said, a guy with a lot more strength and power, who's a better boxer. He doesn't really get hit until deeper into the fight, but he's also facing a guy that, you know, Lopez is going to need to land a lot in order to get his work done. Both guys have to work that out for them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's going to be a treat. It's going to be definitely a treat on September 15th. You know, even though there are weight issues, but we're going to find out what all four men are made out of. The thing I like about Josecito, the kid does come to fight. He's coming for a paycheck, but it's just not for that paycheck. He's coming to work.
Yeah.
And I think that's why a lot of fans are clinging on to him or being behind him on this fight here. I mean, he's not given a full extent of he might win, but he's definitely getting his fair nods of, I hope you win, bro. I hope you win. It's just one of those type of moments. And it's those moments in boxing and sports history that we root for the underdog. And he's a real, real underdog in this fight facing Canelo. This Mexican star kid is he's got all the stars in line for him right now. And Josecito can be a shooting star and mess up the alignment. Give us an eclipse, maybe. We don't know. Really depends, because even though I think that Canelo's a much better boxer than Victor Ortiz, he gets tagged a lot. He does get tagged a lot. And he can be a little bit more patient, where Ortiz is a little bit more wild and ready to go. He's gung-ho with it. Canelo's not like that. He's more of a controlled, disciplined fighter. He likes to look for openings. Yeah, he likes to look for openings and shots. He likes to see, okay, where can I go now with this punch? You know, even though we don't give him that much credit, I'll give him credit. He's a much more intelligent fighter than given. Smart kid.
Yeah, he's very restrained, which is what I like about it, you know. Let me try to give him a call one more time.
Go ahead.
I'll be right back.
Go right ahead, you know. Josecito Lopez is different. You know, we've seen him in fights. We've seen him go forward. We've seen resilience out of him. And that resilience has got him by. It's got him to where he's at right now. Victor Ortiz is a prime example. If he was hesitant and he didn't go all balls forward, Ortiz would have had his night.
Right here.
He would have had his night. We're back right now with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and I believe we have the champion, Sergio Martinez, here with us on Leaving the Ring.
Hola.
Is Sergio with us?
Hello. Yes, I'm Sergio.
Hey, Sergio. Welcome to the show. Thank you for taking the time to speak with
Gabriel.
Yes, Gabriel Montoya and David Duenas from Leaving the Ring.
Oh, okay. That's good. I need somebody to speak Spanish, please.
I was told that Anna was going to translate.
Hello?
Hi, Anna. Nathan told me that you were going to translate for him.
Okay. Let me call him on three-way then, okay? One moment.
Fantastic.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Do you want to go on three-way or you want to just translate right now? You want to hear
him
talk?
We can just do it this way if that
okay,
works.
Okay, that's fine.
I see.
Okay, go ahead.
Dave, would you like to start?
Go ahead, man. I'll come out. I'll follow you right after.
At this point, you know, the fight is just a couple weeks away. How are you feeling heading towards the fight? You've been wanting this for so long. Does it feel real to you? Has it settled in, or will that not really happen until the week of the fight?
Ya falta poco para pelea. Es algo que se esperado mucho tiempo. ¿Se siente real para ti?
Hasta que no lo tenga adelante a Chávez Junior, no voy a creer que se va a animar a pelear. Pero quiero que lo que hizo el trabajo para que se pase.
Until Chávez Junior is in front of me, I won't believe that he wants to fight me. But yeah, I believe it's real. I'm training that it's real.
With all this happened, everybody's been discussing this, the vandalism with your car and everything. Do you believe it was an isolated incident? Do you think it's Chavez Jr.'s camp or people that are connected to his camp? And do you think it shows a bit of fear on their part?
Lo de vandalismo que pasó. ¿Crees que fue el campamento de Chávez o crees que fue alguna otra persona? ¿Crees que es que tengan miedo?
No creo que haya sido nadie relacionado con él. No, vamos, estoy seguro que no.
No, I'm sure that it wasn't anybody related to the Chavez camp.
Looking at his last three fights, do you see a great improvement in Chavez Jr.? And if so, what is it?
Mirando las últimas tres peleas de Chavez, ¿crees que ha mejorado?
Sí, aprecio estar con Freddy Rose. Vale,
Yes, he looks like he's bettered himself, and being with Freddie Roach, I'm sure, helped him a lot.
Let me ask him, on the decision of not taking any testings for dope, why did he agree to do that? I know some of it had to do with if he asked for a testing, the fight might not have happened. But seeing the size difference from Chavez to himself and being that, you know, he's been labeled as a clean fighter, is there any concern about it at all?
En la decisión que tomaron de no hacer las pruebas de antidoping, viendo que Chávez está más grande y tiene muchos rumores que, pues, tú sabes que si te da miedo o qué piensas.
No me da miedo, pero si hay rumores, por algo.
He said, no, he's not afraid of anything, him being bigger, and that was a decision that, you know, his camp made, and he's saying that rumors are out there for a reason.
The size difference is obviously, he probably didn't recognize fully the size difference until facing him face to face. When he got face to face, did they have to go back and change their game plan in getting in with Chavez?
La diferencia de tamaño es que cuando estabas frente a él, ¿cambió tu plan de entrenamiento? ¿Cambió algo?
No, mi plan no cambió para nada. Trabajamos igual de duro que siempre.
Yeah, the game plan didn't change at all. I'm working as hard as I work for every fight, and that's it.
I'm curious that this is your, I think, the third fight without Gabriel Sarmiento in the camp as the one doing the game planning. It always seems to me that you're in the same condition. You work very hard, especially with Pablo there. But do you miss having him there as your game plan, as your general?
Dice que son tres peleas que has hecho sin Gabriel en el campamento haciendo el plan de entrenamiento, que si te hace falta, lo extrañas, porque ve que estás entrenando igual, que tu condición es igual.
Bueno, estamos en contacto con él y con Pablo nos entendemos perfectamente.
No, we're still in contact with him. You know, they him and Pablo work together, and I work really well with Pablo as well. So it's like the same thing.
Pablo's been there since the very beginning as well, right? I know that watching some of your fights overseas when you won your European title, he was also in the corner. Is that true?
Who? I'm sorry. Can you repeat that again?
Pablo has been there just as long as Gabriel. Is that correct?
Pablo ha estado contigo el mismo tiempo que Pablo, ¿es correcto?
Yeah.
Yes, that's correct.
You've talked a lot about the knockout, that you're going to knock him out. Is that the way you've always envisioned the fight, or do you feel that with everything against you, with Top Rank and his name and the judges, that you absolutely have to knock him out?
Tú hablas de que lo vas a noquear. ¿Es algo que es tu visión que has visto desde hace tiempo o es algo que no más siento que vas a hacer?
Es lo que estoy seguro que voy a hacer.
It's the one thing I know I'm going to do. I'm sure I'm going to do. I work for that.
That face-off has been the talk among all fight fans so far. And the one question is that it looks like Sergio has a genuine dislike for Chavez. Can you tell us a little bit about the dislike he has for Julio Cesar?
El face-off está hablado de por muchos medios. ¿Es algo que realmente sientes con lo que estabas diciendo en el programa? Yes, everything I said, I feel everything, you know, it's real, and I think I could have said more. I think I was too nice to him. There was truth I could have said, but I didn't.
What upsets him the most that he was given, his belt was taken away from him, given to him, And it seems that he's had the much easier road to get where he's at. What upsets Martinez more about Chavez?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that again? Sorry, there's a lot of noise.
I said, what upsets him more, that the fact that the belt was taken away from him and given to Chavez, or is it the fact that he's at a position where he's at solely off of the name of his father? What upsets him more?
¿Qué te molesta más? ¿Que el cinto se le haya dado a Chavez o que está en esa posición por el nombre de su padre? Por el apellido de su padre. Both things bother me.
I'm curious, he was talking about the knockout. With Williams, it seemed like you and Gabby and the team had found something very clear, a very clear opening with a specific punch that you would use in order to knock him out. Have you found something specific in with Chavez the same way?
En la segunda pelea con Williams, tu equipo y tú trabajaron con ese golpe que sabían que iba a noquear a Williams. ¿Hay algo específico que descubrieron ustedes? Yes, of course, I'm not going to say it.
I was just curious if it was something specific or just...
He said, I'm just kidding. He said that there's a lot of things. There's a lot of things they see and there's a lot of things they're working on.
So it is something specific. It's not just that he's really slow and wide open for punches. Does he think...
No. It's a lot of things, he said. A lot of things that they see.
With Junior, I mean, it seems like he really relies on his chin. He thinks that's his greatest strength. Would Martinez, would he think that that's actually his greatest weakness if he thinks, you know, he's going to need to use that a lot in order to win? Does he think that he could turn that against him?
Según Chavez, tiene una buena quijada. ¿Vas a usar eso contra él? We're going to see if his chin is as good as he says and if he's going to, you know, put up with my hits, my punches.
I think the speed and the angles is going to be the problem.
Yeah, I think so, too. I can't wait for this fight. You know, I mean, this is a fight that's been in the making for quite some time. And I got to tell you this, that the mood of Martinez, it says it all. I mean, we've had him on numerous times. And he's normally more talkative. I could really tell that there's some dislike, and he's finally got the wish that he's asked for a long time, which is to fight this kid, get it done and over with.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, well, I want to thank him for his time. I know he's got a lot of media obligations and everything. So
okay,
thank you
so
for coming on. And we'll see you in Vegas.
Thank you very much, and we'll see you in Vegas.
All right.
Take care.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye. A much different Sergio Martinez ever had here on Leaving the Ring. I got it. That's the first thing that real short.
As a guy that's transcribed a lot of his interviews, that was the shortest I've ever heard him. He was.
Yeah, especially from him. I mean, you know what's funny? I've heard he's like extremely focused. He's not the same guy. He's determined.
Yeah.
You know, and these are reports from people that are with him getting back to me. And I got to tell you, they're right on about it. I mean, he is not the same guy. This guy's ready for business. Martinez came over to the ring a handful of times and has never been this short in giving answers.
No. I mean, granted, he's at the end of his training day. He just did HBO. He's probably just like, okay, let's just fight already. But he's been on the show. You know, we communicated all day. And, yeah, I mean, like I said, all the interviews I've transcribed, I've done it from this show, talking to him in person. He's usually, you know, he does all the talking. And, this time around, it kind of, I'll tell you, one of the reasons I kind of flipped around in terms of my pick was just kind of talking to somebody, you know, this week, and they were like, you know, there was some, I don't want to like say exactly what they said or who they were or what camp, I don't want to give it away, but there was nervousness about Chavez Jr. It wasn't a complete like, oh, we got this. And then speaking on the other side, there's not a lot of nerves. Everybody feels very confident that Sergio is going to knock him out. And it was people that I spoke to that kind of maybe that gave me weight there, you know, that made me kind of go, well, wait a minute, you know. I mean, really, you look at the styles, and it should be Martinez, you know. But I don't know. We'll see. You know, it's going to be an interesting fight. As the person, you know, one person said, like, I see no reason why Martinez loses his fight. That's what the person said to me.
Well,
and that's one of the better opinions. I mean, I won't say who it is, but it's one of the better, one of the people I trust, like, to make a good pick, you know? So, I don't know. It kind of maybe changed, you know. I thought I was good at it, but I was like, hmm.
You know, I haven't leaned towards Chavez. I mean, I haven't been, like, fully going, like, oh, he's going to win this one. Does he have the size and possibly some of the tools to do it? Absolutely. But Martinez should have this 100%. But then again, this is a fight game, and that's not the way the things work in boxing.
Yeah. You just never know.
But Saturday night, we're going to find out. We're definitely going to find out. Like I said, first time ever, we've had Sergio Martinez on Leave the Ring a handful of times. Before he was even known, we've had him on. And this is a guy that loved to give answers, liked to be on interviews, would communicate with the fans. This time, we got a different Sergio Martinez. We got a bit of a, this kid got underneath my skin, and he's going to pay for it. This is going to be a hell of a fight.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. You know, I think it's going to be everything we wanted it to be, you know. But we'll see. I wonder if it's going to be everything that the guys wanted it to be. But, Dave, it's about that time. We
it's
made it
about
through.
About that time. Say goodbye, all five fans. We'll see you next Thursday.
Dave, as always, great show. And I will see you at the fight.
All right. All right, everybody. Well, we'll be back next week, Thursday, here on Leaving in the Ring. And Saturday, don't forget, September 8th, we're going to be Riverside, chilling with the Riverside King, the Rocky, Josecito Lopez and Henry Ramirez. So be sure to tune in.
Am I going
to
that?
Night.
Am I going to be at that?
Huh?
Oh, wait a minute. That's what we're doing next weekend. September 8th. I can't wait. Oh, and I wanted to, before I go, I wanted to thank Nathan Lefkowitz for setting up the interview tonight. He, you know, we were trying to get Sergio, and he contacted, I think, you, and then I contacted him today, and he took care of it on pretty short notice, and I really appreciate it. And
yeah, Nathan, you know, he's a trooper, man. I mean, you know, we talked really quick, and then I threw it over to you because I was at work, and I said, let's get this done, let's get this handled, and he did it, man. So much appreciated. Fight fans, like always, have a lot of fun. We appreciate everybody that tunes in and follows and supports Leaving the Ring, supports David Duenas and Gabriel Montoya and David Chan behind the switchboard. Again, hey, brother, I will talk to you soon. People don't drink and drive. Have a good time. Relax. Enjoy the 4-day weekend. I'll talk to you soon.
Peace.